Iti
Ukva
Harvat Svargam
Naradas
Saha Kumburu
Yudhishthira
Vachas
Tasya
Hridi
Vidva
Jahach
Chucha
Yadyukvaharuhatsvaragam
Naradasahatumburu
Yudhishthira vachas
tasya
Hridi kritva jahach chucha Yadyukvaharuhatsvaragam Thus, having addressed Atar. Thereafter. Aruhat. Ascended. Svaragam. Into outer space. Narada. The great sage Narada. Saha. Along with. Tumburu. His stringed instrument. Yudhishthira. Maharaj Yudhishthira. Vacha. Instructions. Tasya. Of his. Vridhi Kritva. Keeping in the heart. Ajahat. Gave up. Sucha. All lamentations. Translation. Having spoken thus, the great sage Narada, along with his Veena, ascended into outer space. Yudhishthira kept his instructions in his heart, and so was able to get rid of all lamentations. Purport. Sri Naradaji is an eternal spaceman, having been endowed with the spiritual body by the grace of the Lord. He can travel in outer spaces of both the material and spiritual worlds without restriction, and can approach any planet in unlimited space within no time. We have already discussed his previous life as the son of a minister. Because of his association with pure devotees, he was elevated to the position of an eternal spaceman, and thus had freedom of movement. One should therefore try to follow in the footsteps of Narada Muni and not make a futile effort to reach other planets by mechanical means. Maharaj Yudhishthira was a pious king, and therefore he could see Narada Muni occasionally. Anyone who desires to see Narada Muni must first be pious and follow in the footsteps of Narada Muni. Thus ended the Bhaktivedanta purports of the first canto, 13th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Dhritarashtra, his poem. So this ends this group or this section. For now, the instructions of Narada Muni have been given to Yudhishthira Maharaj to free him from his lamentation. He is in anxiety about his relatives. And to free him from this, then now this instructions or description by Narada Muni has been given. So this ends this, so then we can understand that his purpose was this, to free him from all lamentation. So Prabhupada says, is making the point that we also can become free from lamentation by becoming pious and following the footsteps of Narada Muni, following his instructions. Narada Muni, his instructions are specifically that of worship of the regulated service, devotional service, from the platform of detachment. This is his specific preaching platform, what he trains people in. So this then is what we can gain. Then being pious means then we have to follow these instructions. We see here is that there's a practicalness here. He's saying here he was able to get rid of all lamentation. So Prabhupada has here pointed out that Narada Muni in his previous life was the son of a maidservant. Right? So as a son of a maidservant, then naturally the position would be of lamentation. And especially in his situation, there was no father. Father had died. Or whatever reason wasn't there. Mother was therefore working in the house of someone doing some menial service. And he was then, you know, with his mother. He was very young. Then his mother dies. You know, so then there's no reason for him to stay there. So then he moves on. So going from this situation of basically being that of a menial servant
being in a position like that of a Shudra. Shudra means one who laments. To come from that to an eternal spaceman, where he is free from all lamentation. Lamentation means ignorance. Ignorance means what binds us here. Prabhupada once, in one purport, says that Narad Muni can fly into space because he doesn't think he can't. Right? He's not conditioned to think, I must stay here, I must walk on the ground. He knows I'm free. This is Krishna's space. You can move through it as you please. So in that liberated position, he is able to do this. So therefore, then also the showing of all lamentation being there, a very practical example is that of Narad Muni. He can move anywhere at will. So automatically, this is something very special. We also hear of that the Vaikuntha Vasis, that they're regularly coming down to preach. Sanatana Goswami describes this, that the residents of Vaikuntha, they're just constant streams of them are coming. They're just chatting and talking with each other, walking down to the material world, where they'll come and then they'll preach and do something, and then they'll go back. So they're just constantly coming and going to the material world to do preaching activities. So this freedom of movement, this is natural for one who is free from lamentation. So lamentation means that one is conditioned. One is free from that conditioning, then one is free. One is not stuck here in the material world. One is able to move as it pleases. And this is done by, Prabhupada mentions, is not by mechanical means. This mechanical means is not what one would describe as a very efficient method. So much difficulty, so much dependency upon others. Narad Muni, without depending on anyone, he just takes his veena, starts playing, singing, and goes. Like that. It's not that it's a mystical veena, he holds the veena, he goes. No, he's free to go. The veena goes with him. Like that. Okay. So, Prabhupada is making the point that therefore we should try to follow in the footsteps. This is the end of this section. So this is what is being pointed out. Dhritarashtra, even though he was so materialistic, he was liberated. And he was only liberated only because he offended Vaishnavas. If it wasn't offensive to Vaishnavas, then he could actually take up the devotional path. Then he could move forward. But Prabhupada says after many lives of liberation, then one can come to the devotional platform. Because devotional service comes from the devotees. If we're offensive to devotees, then how we will receive devotional service from the devotees? We may think, okay, I'm nice to this devotee and not nice to that devotee. But the principle of devotee is what's important for Krishna. Because in the spiritual world, we may think, but you know, this person is this, or different opinion, or different approach, different mood, so we can afford to be inimical. But if we look, that's okay if we're interested in Vaikuntha. Even that is not so okay. But in Vaikuntha, basically, there's one mood, that of just that serving of Krishna in awe and reverence. But even amongst that, we even have differences of opinion. We see that Sanatana Goswami describes that some feel that there should be no spontaneity or no informality in worship of the Lord. And some of the Vaikuntha Vasis feel it's okay. Maybe I wouldn't do it, but if someone else does, we can appreciate. So they'll give that space. But in Vrindavan, you have so many contradictory relationships, rasas, positions, because everything is in Vrindavan. That is the point of it. That's what's special about Vrindavan. Everything is there. Any other manifestation, Krishna is not manifesting his full potency. It means everything has its place. Vaikuntha, the opulence becomes the prominent. Ayodhya, then, his following of the regulations and rules becomes prominent. But Vrindavan then is that of the fullness of every aspect of himself is manifest, because there is manifest his most dear servant, who is the full manifestation of his counterpart. Therefore, he is fully manifest. We talk about Krishna, everything expands from Krishna. This is the tattva, this is the position, this is the platform of knowledge. He is the original person, and everything is him, and he expands that. So by tattva, by knowledge, then we understand this position. You know, which is coming from where and everything. But we must understand by rasa, Krishna comes from the devotee. Is this, you understand? Krishna is rasa. See, generally we think of Krishna and we think of he's in this rasa or he's in that rasa. You know, Radha Krishna, Krishna's in Kanchana rasa, or Krishna in Jasoda, Krishna's in the Vatsalya. But if you actually think about it, we've never heard that concept being applied to Krishna. Mother Yashoda is in parental rasa, the gopis are in conjugal rasa, the cowherd boys are in friendship rasa. Not Krishna. Krishna is rasa. So he's all of that. He's the source of it. But now, because he's all of it, then if it's all manifested once, then he's known as Atmarama. Right? There's him, the self-effulgent Lord, is there, one without a second. He is completely satisfied, and everything is going on. Because everything is manifest, everything is present at once. Right? Everything is within him. But when one of those qualities is brought forward, then you have rasa. Mother Yashoda approaches Krishna with the idea, he is my son, and if I do not feed him, he will die. Therefore, Krishna responds. Krishna makes his point. As you surrender, as you worship, he reciprocates. That's the principle. Is as the person does, he reciprocates. Therefore, he is the undisputed Lord. Just as a side note, this is actually how the masculine principle functions. It reciprocates with what appears before it. Trying to establish the masculine principle on a situation, this is a female quality. Right. It's very interesting. Feminine quality tries to control the situation, make it work the way they want it to. The masculine is it interacts with whatever is happening, with whoever it's happening with. Does this make some sense? It's a very subtle point, because generally we think of the opposite. That's why the scriptures and the acharyas are so important, because what we would perceive or think is many times opposite of what it actually is in reality. You know, just like we were saying there, we think of Krishna, oh, he's in this rasa. No, he isn't. He is rasa. Devotees are in the rasa. So the devotee is the ashrama, and therefore then they draw. So by tattva, then Krishna, the devotees come expand from Krishna. But that Krishna that we know, like we say Madan Mohan or Govinda or Gopinath or Nisringadev, or means Vishnu is there. Had anyone seen half man, half lion before Prahlad? No, because the mood of Prahlad was such, it drew from Krishna this manifestation. This is the point. The Lord reciprocates with the devotee, and that makes some unique manifestation. So the most fullest of this unique manifestation is Krishna and Vrindavan. because there the fullness of each rasa is so complete that therefore the manifestation is also the most wonderful. And there, because everything is there, that means all contradictions will also be there. Vaikuntha has no contradictions. In Vrindavan, it's all contradictions. To hold the rasa dance, Krishna has to work out the natural jealousy of, just as a start, what's prominent that we can, you know, get a grasp in our mind, 16,108 girls. Same place, same time, same guy. Right? 16,000, that's just what's prominent. Right? 16,100, the next number up from that is 16 million. You know, like that. But this is just within a realm that we can kind of like accommodate. You know, so then that comes down, of that 108, of that 8, of that 2, of that 1. So then, all that, so that's contradictory. Right wing, left wing, this is contradictory. Then you have the rasas don't get along. Conjugal ras, parakya conjugal ras does not manifest where there is parental rasa. It is unmanifest. So that means the greatest enemy to conjugal rasa is parental rasa. But every day Radharani comes and cooks in Krishna's house and they taste conjugal rasa. How does that happen? Cowherd boys do great with parental rasa because then they're always with Krishna and they can be friends and be as goofy and crazy as possible. And it's not a problem. Parents like that. But it slightly stifles conjugal rasa. You know, servitorship also is okay with that. With the conjugal rasa, but not so great. Shanta rasa is fine. Trees, bushes, cows, flowers, it's great. So each one has what works and what doesn't for them. All that's going on. Vaikuntha is servitorship. Even Lakshmi is seen as the greatest servant. You don't know, in Vaikuntha, they don't think of her in conjugal rasa. She is, but they don't think of her. They think of her as the greatest servant. So it becomes very easy. But in Vrindavan, it's all contradictory. So the point we originally started from was that there, it's not that, okay, when I get out of here, then I'll get away from all these different personalities and different angles and visions and all. No, when you get there, there's going to be more of them. Right? Like that. There you got thousands, millions you got to deal with. But it works because Krishna is the center. Because Krishna is the center, it works very nicely. It works perfectly. So that's the principle. So therefore, the need to be regulated and the need to be detached. One is detached, one is able to move with the situation. We want to control the situation. We want to, therefore, by controlling, enjoy it. But that's not the process. Trying to control it, trying to enjoy it, no one has ever succeeded in being happy. Doesn't work. Right? Krishna, he is detached. Therefore, he automatically, whatever is the situation, he's in the present. Because if you're trying to control, you're trying to control, where are you living? In the future, present, or past? If you're trying to control, that means you haven't attained it. It means it's something to come. Means it's motive passion, it's future. Therefore, you're not enjoying. Until it comes to present, you don't enjoy. Enjoyment's only in the present. If you're detached, then it's just what's happening now. You're in the present. Therefore, if there is anything to enjoy, it will be happening. But because you're detached, you're not trying to enjoy it. So you get the experience of happiness, but you cannot say, I am enjoying it. As soon as you do, then that's past. It moves into ignorance. Or just saying, in other words, it's not easy to be male. This is Krishna. He is in the present. All these other things, switching, moving, this, that, that's female. That's us. We're always being overwhelmed by these things. So that's the whole thing, is that because the spiritual realm is in his mood, we go to the spiritual world, we are in his mood. You go to that place where it is that mood. So therefore, then one has to have that position of the piety of regulated life that is following the instructions, and that is free from attachment, that detachment. Then it works. It's just very peacefully, pleasantly situated in the moment, and that moment is for Krishna. And therefore, then one is free from the material world. Because technically, if you look at it, Vaikuntha exists. The material world also exists, but you add two things to it. The future and the past. So, present is common to the material world and the spiritual world. Point is most people don't live in the present. They're not in the mode of goodness. They're living in the future or the past. So if you remove passion and ignorance, then you have pure goodness. What's the difference between being here and in Vaikuntha? There is no difference. Technically, there's no difference. That's what makes the difference. Is you take Vaikuntha, you take Brahman, add to it past and future, and it becomes the material Mahatattva. It becomes the material government. So that's why great devotees, they're not in the material world. They don't see material elements because they're not dealing with passion and ignorance that actually creates them. And the goodness they're dealing with, of course, is pure goodness. Because material goodness has some passion and ignorance so that it functions. Because as soon as you clear all passion and ignorance, you're in the spiritual world. So there has to be even some in the material mode of goodness for the material world to manifest. So, does this make some sense? This all? That's it. Okay. Okay, so here's the... So then, if Yudhishthir Maharaj is able to appreciate the spiritual platform of what has been attained by his uncles and aunt, then he's freed from lamentation. He's freed from lamentation, then he is not on the material platform. So this is an important lesson. Right? The first canto is actually establishing the mentality or all the basic fundamental points before we start the Bhagavatam as spoken by Sukadeva Goswami. So this is the Bhagavatam as spoken by Sukadeva Goswami. Right? Which is what is documented for us. So this is what's known as the Bhagavatam. But before that, we have to understand the Lord is the protector. Right? We have the whole pastime of Uttara. We open with that. Right? Now here we're saying that you have to perform your activities without attachment. Now we'll go on to another section, the disappearance of Lord Krishna. Then we'll have to establish all that. This is all, of course, based on Krishna as the Supreme Lord. And, you know, Krishna is transcendental. So these are being established. So here's another major point, is performance of one's duties in a regulated way without attachment. Because this section is Narad Muni's section. And this is what Narad Muni teaches. And we see, he's just taught that to Yudhishthira Maharaj, practical example. Pancharatra, basically, we generally think of Pancharatra as deity worship. Pancharatra technically means that it is full engagement exclusively in the Lord's service, according to regulation. That's Pancharatra. Because in Pancharatra, you're studying of the scriptures. Like us sitting in Bhagavatam class at this time, this is a Pancharatra rule that we're going to chant our japa. You know, a fixed note, that's Pancharatra. Otherwise, Bhagavad is, you're chanting 24/7. So there's no question of having to say you got to chant 16 rounds. You're going to chant lakhs and lakhs every day because that's all you do. Isn't that what you're doing? Once I saw one devotee, he was chanting, and you could see him chanting, you know. And somebody asked him a question, and it was a particular point in the mantra, and he gave his answer, and then he went back to chanting. But he was, how much time it was to answer the question, that's how far along he was in the mantra. In other words, he didn't stop chanting the mantra. Just instead of chanting it through the senses, it was simply being chanted in the mind. So this person was always chanting. The Prabhupada said he was liberated. So then that means you're only liberated if you're always chanting. Kirtani Siddhartha. So we can see is that always. So that 16 rounds is a minimum. That's a pancharatrik consideration. Mangalartik, right? Taking a bath, putting tilak, you know, the dress we had, shaving our head. All these are all in the pancharatrik. That we do our service, that we take prasad, that we associate with devotees, we take care of guests. You know, that we're going to describe that means studying the Bhagavatam, means swadhyaya, means studying, practicing, and teaching. So all these things are regulated by Pancharatra. So sometimes we will think, well, Pancharatra is only when we're in the deity room or making an artik or offering, you know, excuse me, making offering an artik. Excuse me. But actually our whole day is Pancharatra. So that's the broader sense of it. And then to perform that without a desire for result, then that is Narad Muni's teaching. So he sees Prabhupada, that's what he's always stressed, is Narad Muni's teachings. Because right? We're in his line. He's our acharya. So Prabhupada's always saying, be engaged, always be regular, and do it with detachment. So we can see this Prabhupada is the perfect example of any preacher, practitioner and preacher of Narad Muni's Narad Muni's platform, Narad Muni's preaching mission. So it applies to all of us. So when we say Pancharatra and Naishkarmya, it's not an unfamiliar thing. It's exactly what Prabhupada's been preaching. And part of the regulation of Pancharatra is the deity is worshipped at a specific time in a specific way. The point is all one's activities are for the deity. Even one's taking one's bath, brushing one's teeth, or taking prasad, or sleeping. Right? It's all done as part of the constructive process of worshipping the deity. So then it becomes very natural for us. So it's not a new thing. Just sometimes in the technical words and terminologies, it seems to be that is different. It seems to be, you know, change the flavor. That's why it's very important that anything can be discussed, but don't change the flavor. Right? Prabhupada's given a flavor, an angle, that should be maintained. We don't change that. But the technical aspects, those can be discussed, because Prabhupada discusses them all. Just many times he doesn't use the technical terminology. So we think it's, or like Prabhupada says, Krishna is the supreme subject, Radharani is the supreme object. So that is Ashray Vishay, that's an aspect of Bhava. Right? That's Vibhava. So one of the five principles of prema is Vibhava. So Prabhupada doesn't use these technical terms, so people will say, oh, he doesn't discuss all these high things. But It's common. We've heard Krishna supreme subject, Radharani supreme object. So it's not a problem. Prabhupada's always talking about the relationships, the rasas. So. But if you use technical terminology, then there's the idea by the conditioned soul that this is more elevated, because jnana is considered higher and more valued than karma. Understand why the mistake? Why the mistake is there? So even though someone may be feeling themselves more advanced and functioning on a more advanced level, but their platform of why they are more advanced is the platform of jnana. It's not actually bhakti. Because for the gopis, they simply see his footsteps in the dust and they are in ecstasy. They see a tamal tree that just happens to be black. They're in ecstasy. Right? So it's not that you have to sit down and exclusively discuss certain pastimes to get that mood. No, these devotees don't have any, but they're in the mood. They don't have any problem. They don't, it's not a problem. Just like you have a lady, she has a child, she can only be a mother and chase that rasa only with, exclusively with her child, when she's just with the child. Would you actually say she's what you call a mother? Would you really say she's a good mother? She can't relate to anybody else's kid. She can't relate to, you know, parental rasa if anybody else is in the room. It has to be exclusively her and her kid. And she's the real, would you call her a real mother? No, not at all. Someone who's a real ma, as anything, is, you know, I would say, what would be the word? Anything is, falls into the category of being sat down and be fed. If it's got a mouth and hands, you know, you grab it, you sit it down, you feed it, you know, you complain that they're not, you know, taking care of their health and they are not, it doesn't matter. Like if you're the prime minister of the country, that's, doesn't come into the question, it's not a part of the equation. So that's the point. Rasik means one who tastes rasa. So anything can spark rasa. Any element is there. So the gopis, when they're quoting the scriptures, they're not quoting, you know, all kinds of high things. They're all talking about, you know, you're not a nice person because, you know, in your, you know, previous lifetime, you cut off the nose of Suparnika. So you're not nice to girls. Right? So this is what they're talking about. So, and they're able to maintain very nice rasa with Krishna based on this. So they don't have any limitations like this. Right? This is the thing, no restriction. If you're restricted, that means you're conditioned. So therefore, you're restricted because you are conditioned, therefore you follow the rules and regulations given in the scripture about restriction so that you can become liberated. Because otherwise, if we don't follow the restriction, we do what we like, how we like, when we like, then we're not going to, how we'll get free? How we'll get free? So this idea that if there's any regulation that it's not the higher forms of devotional, this is not supported by the scriptures. You know, this is not supported. Because it must be there. Like that. So the form of it will always be perfect. Any questions or comments?
Thinking more about how Krishna is totally attached to his prasadas.
How is this detaching? Because you're talking about the contradictions that Krishna's detached at the same time we understand from the scriptures and from his practical behavior that he's very attached to the devotees. So here is, see, a difficulty comes because naishkarmya means to perform karma or an activity without desiring the result. Means you're not performing the activity because it will give you a specific result. Detachment in English simply means that you're not attached to it. And because attachment is the method of activity, only when you're attached. If you're on the mental platform, only if you're attached you act. Therefore, the immediate thing that comes to mind is detachment means no activity, therefore it's a bad word. You know, in fact, if you seriously want to discuss social issues, basically within our society, and amongst the broad range of devotees, you cannot use the term detachment. Because their mundane English, Anglo-Saxon angle on the word so overpowers their intelligence that they can't understand that that's just the closest word you can get in this stupid, useless English language. And that's as good as it gets in English. It's a bad word, it's not a great word, but English is that useless of a language that it does not have a broad range of words. Okay, when it comes to derogatory, criticizing, political, sexual, these things, then it's great vocabulary. But anything that is actually on the transcendental platform, it's probably one of the most restricted languages. Better than some. You know, at least they have a concept of God as a person. You know, like in some languages, they only have the concept that there's a supreme. It doesn't even go into the personal realm. So some are even more restricted. You know, the metaphysical platform also, it's not, the language is not scientific in that it's, how you say, perceivable. It's always, metaphysical generally means mystical. So there's always some ignorance mixed in it. So, but because it's such a popular language, because of, you know, so many, its ease of use and lack of grammar, therefore it's a great language to preach in. And so it's worthwhile trying to learn how to get around its weaknesses. You know, that's why Prabhupada uses. That's why it must be seen in the context that Prabhupada gives it. So then, but if we see from the Sanskrit, nishkam karma, or naishkarmya, it means that activity is being done, and karma means it's being done according to the scripture. And that means, if it's done according to the scripture, then its purpose is to create ideal social and emotional and intellectual and sensual interaction. That's a given. But the point is if you're doing it to get that result, then you're not actually dealing fully with what you're dealing with. Because you're thinking, I will do this, then I will get that. But you're not thinking, that moment you're thinking, I will get that, or I will do this, you're not now here. So therefore, the quality of your interaction with the other living entity is not of great expansion. But naishkarmya means you're dealing here now with the person. You know, you hear him talk about it, you're there, be here now, these things. You know, say what you mean, you know him, the gems. All, you know, unlimited books say unlimited things. All they're trying to say is this. But that's the basis of our function. We start from that. They're trying to get to that. No, we start from that, then we go from there. You know, it's just like, for some, sarva dharma paritya ja, that's the end of the line. For us, that's how we get new bhaktas off the street. We start there. So that's the whole point, is like, we'll see, initiation, we've gotten there. No, initiation is the beginning. So any of these things, it's different. So the difficulty comes is because of that. So Naishkarya means Krishna is always engaged in activity. That's all he's doing. But the result of it, he is leaving that up to Yogamaya. Therefore, and because of that, he's never frustrated. Therefore, it's always pastime. That's one of the things we say, the Mayavadi say, yes, we're all God. You know, then why are you here suffering? Oh, it's our pastime. He says, yeah, of course. When you're suffering, you can call it nice. No, it's not pastime. Then. That's punishment. But Krishna, it doesn't matter what reversal happens or what change or anything happens in his past, his pastime, because he's always just living what is there now. He is there, things looking like it's going to happen in one way, suddenly there's a complete reversal, and then now he just gets into the mood of, oh, this, and then tastes that. And it's just whatever is happening, that's what he's tasting at the moment. With those devotees in the present. Because if he's there, and he's there with the gopis, and Jatila and Gotila walk in on the scene, then he can't deal with the gopis in the same way. It must be flavored. You must add into the equation Jatila and Gotila. Right? Right? You can't say, I'm going to have a sweet, and then I'm going to add some chili, and some sour to it, and it's going to stay as sweet. No, it's going to turn into a chutney. So now if we're attached to it being a sweet, we're frustrated. Or we're going to be an illusion. Oh, hey, try my nice sweet. And they're going, it's kind of like a chutney. What's sweet, isn't it? Yes. Very sweet, yeah. It says, yeah, it's kind of sweet. You know, that's the illusion. No, but it changes. So Krishna immediately is then tasting that and finding some nice way to adjust that to, you know, so that it becomes favorable. So the flow of rasa is not impeded. So therefore then he'll take the form of a deity of, you know, Ma Kali. You know, he's standing there and that. And the gopis will be then doing the worship and all that. And then Jyotila and Gotila will come into the kunj because they know Krishna is in the kunj with the gopis, and they'll fling open the doors and, oh, okay, like that. So, you know, so then they'll understand, okay. So like this, then Krishna is always doing these different funny things. So it's, for him, it's just that moment. So it's different. So therefore, he's simply reciprocating what rasa is there. They've come there, the gopis are there to please him in their mood, in their service. Jyotila and Gotila are there to create obstacles for that. That's their service. So therefore, he will get by their, you know, incorporate their service, at the same time get back to the other service. Right? Because they come there to find fault, but then there was no fault. So then they'll look somewhere else for fault. So they'll go off with that faulty mind down the road looking for something else. So they're still situated in their service. It's been perfectly resolved with the gopi service. Does that make sense? So the contradictions are perfectly resolved through the Lord's passing because he's not attached. It has to go this way. There's times when Krishna goes, climbs up into a tree in, you know, in the courtyard of Radharani's house to get her attention in her room on the roof, and then Abhimanyu and company decide that it's very hot, why don't we sleep in the courtyard? So he spends the whole night in the tree. You know, but then he tastes that mood, that separation, and Radharani is right there, but he can't. You know what I'm saying? So it's another thing. It means, for him it's not a problem because he is the controller. He doesn't have to prove it. I just taste whatever's coming, but we prove that I'm the controller and enjoyer if I can do it in this way, you know. I did it my way, you know, like that. So that's the thing, is that's the point. The guy ended up on the road. He didn't get any benefit, but he's happy because he did it his way. So that's the mundane masculine concept, is I did it my way. Not necessarily that you enjoyed from it or anything else, or that you even had good interaction. the satisfaction is I did it the way I wanted to do it. I made the plan, I executed it, and that. So that has its advantages, but as far as creating situation, but as far as tasting rasa, it may or may not have advantages. Right? So there's a completely different, we have a very mixed up idea of what is male and female. I think it was the other day we were reading the, like last week we discussed that point, those four points of Brahman. That's from the Vishnu Purana. Another point that was there is that the list is given by one of the sages. And he just describes, I don't know, 20, 30, 40 things in the universe as male and female principle. And he says, ultimately, there's no need to say all this. All you have to say is everything is Vishnu and Lakshmi. Because everything's male and female, every aspect, and so therefore Vishnu and Lakshmi. So if you understand them, you understand everything. So that was the point. So we have a completely this very strange idea of what is how things function, because we don't actually understand male and female. Because everything is only Radha and Krishna. And then they expand when it comes into the realm of out of Raja, then to Lakshmi Narayana. And then when you leave Lakshmi Narayana out of it, then they expand as Shiva Parvati. It's still the same principle as functioning. Does that make sense? So automatically the contradiction is male-female, but it's perfectly resolved if you know how to do it. So Krishna is male, all his devotees are female. So therefore he knows how to perfectly resolve all of these different aspects. So his unlimited shaktis, he's able to interact with perfectly. You know, even in the cosmic manifestation, everything has its perfect place. So the material world doesn't bother the spiritual world. The Brahman can touch both. Right? Vaikuntha is in his place, you know, Dwarka is in his place, Swigandhi, Mathura, Vrindavan, and they all have their connection. Krishna goes from Vrindavan to Mathura, Mathura to Dwarka. They're always trying to get him to come back from Dwarka to Vrindavan. You know, like this. So it's automatic, it perfectly fits. So he's already, in that way, has balanced all the contradictions. And then within that, then this minor. So that's his taste, it's the pastime. Because the taste in anything, or the gain in anything, is resolving the difference. When you can bring the difference, the two together, that's where anything is, any goal is gained. Does that make sense? And so, the greater the difference, the greater the result. So if you can resolve that, just like let's say, you have a little problem with another person, and that's resolved, you know, it's nice. But if you have a very serious problem with that person, and that's resolved, you feel like a great weight is lifted off the chest, and you feel your mind is clear, and the whole end of the sun and everything. Because the greater the difference, that resolution of it. So therefore we see the most contradiction and contradictory elements of Vrindavan, therefore it has the greatest happiness. So difficulty comes up as we have terms that we're very attached to that we gain from our, you know, Webster's dictionary or whatever it is, you know, or our concept of what the dictionary says, our particular application, our sphere of activities. And we're very attached to that definition, so we're not liberated. We don't have that freedom of language. We're conditioned by language. We're not actually free to use language. You know, many times you find the more literary the person, the more they're conditioned by it than actually free to use it. Like we saw the other day, Prabhupada's just making up phrases and words. Normally people would say this is not correct, but it perfectly says what you want to say, because Prabhupada's not restricted. He knows who wants to say it, he knows how it should be said. We have this idea, no, this has to go there. you know, just like your best writers, the ones that are most acclaimed for unique work, it's unique because it's not according to the common grammar and usage of words and phrases. You know what I'm saying? And therefore, then, what do you say about it? People are still reading Shakespeare after 400 years. They have to make their own vocabulary and grammar for his language. Like this. And any other great writer, it's the same thing. So the rules and regs give you an idea of what is language, but it doesn't give you the freedom in the language. Well, the Vedic concept is just the opposite. The following of the rules and regulations is to create for you the freedom to use it. And if you don't have inspiration, at least it'll be nice. It'll be correct. And if you actually understand what these tools are for, then you're free. So the whole Vedic system is for freedom. It's not actually for restriction. Is to create freedom. You know, just like the person is, you know, I like to be free. I want to do what I want to do. But where do you find them? Where are they being free? They're always out in the street, or at a mall, or at a nightclub, or out in the forest. If you're so free, why can't you be down in, you know, Times Square and be free? No, you have to be out in the forest. That means you're not free. So you're restricted to the forest to taste your freedom. You know, I just want to be myself, but funny that themselves is always the same. You know, and it's strange, it looks just like everybody else who's being themselves. Yeah. So, like that, you know, it's like, it's very typical. Even you say you have somebody who's very avant-garde, but they look like every other avant-garde person. They all look the same. You know, that's why you can call them avant-garde, because they look the same. So that's the thing, is they're restricted. So it's only an illusion that somebody is free. So there's this great quest for that freedom. But freedom is actually only found in the instruction of the acharyas. So when detachment means freedom, but detachment means you're still performing the activity. That's why it doesn't identify with that. Detachment means you don't do the activity. That's the standard definition according to Gyan. And karma means you perform the activity with attachment for result. But both of those will keep you in the material world eternally. But to perform the activity with detachment and knowledge, that will liberate you. And if you do that to please Krishna, that will get you bhakti. Does that make some sense? So that's the difficulty is we have to see is that the word is there to express something. And therefore, definitions have to be very clear. But it's not, but the point is because tasting rasa is actually the purpose of the living entity. Knowledge is not the person. Even knowledge as it can be a medium for tasting the use of the intellect. But knowledge itself is not really what's tasted. So there's something the mind tastes, that interaction. So most of the time, people aren't looking actually for a solution. They're looking for a medium to taste intense emotion. And since they can't find it positive, they look for it in negative in issues. If you solve one issue, there's always another one that takes its place. And it's like that demon, you know, you kill him and then another one pops up in the same place. Like that. So it's therefore there's no such thing as defining terms. You know, I don't know. I mean, I've had it. Maybe you had the situation where you sat down, got into a disagreement with a devotee, and I remember once 3 hours later, after, you know, saying this and that and this and that, kind of argument, counter argument, and slowly start to define your meanings. After 3 hours, we figured out that both of us were saying exactly the same thing, But we were using a different application of the same words. How we don't use this word, the other person would use it differently, so therefore it was a difference of opinion based on semantics of the word. Like that. So in the Vedic concept is you have set definitions of words, and everybody accepts them, because that's the scripture. You know, and that. And then, therefore, then you have a common platform to discuss from. If somebody says earth, you know what it means. It means those particular elements. You know, and if you say air, you know what that means. You know the qualities of air. So therefore, if you refer to any aspect of air, I could start talking about touch. And it wouldn't be contradictory, because air creates touch. You know, and skin. So I can move freely between them, because air is undefined. You know, so it's you know, in that way then it's very, very useful as a system. So over the words, then we have to see is that there is no contradiction. It's seeming contradiction, but that seeming contradiction is there for rasa. So for Krishna, that contradiction is pleasurable. For us, it drives us nuts. Because we're not in control, and we're trying to be in control. And it doesn't work, so it creates frustration. Like that. Because that's the point, is that within the pastime, is the female trying to take the part of the male is fun as an aspect of the pastime. But ultimately, it fails. And then the comment is made, yeah, you know, the lady can never take the man's position. But just for rasa, sometimes it's done just for some fun flavor. You know, they'll make Radharani will be the master Rai. She's the, you know, the Lord, and Krishna has to come and be servant. So many times like this, it's introduced into the pastime in so many different ways. And that, you know, but ultimately Krishna's the Lord, because they're only doing that out of their love for him. So they're the master of his lives anyway. But just to please him, they take these moves. Because it creates that contradiction. But for him, it works. For us, it drives us nuts. Is that okay? Yeah, Mataji's question is in the songs. The acharyas, that there's a lot of lamentation, because there's prayers. There's prayers, that's what prarthana. Then there's danya bodhika, which is lamentation. And then there is lalasamayi, a desire for a spiritual perfection. So it's one of the main aspects of prayers, in the songs. So there, that lamentation is without ignorance, what is incomplete knowledge, and it doesn't stop activity. Lamentation on the mundane platform, you see it stops activity. Because you don't want to interact with the elements. You know, I mean, elements means the parts of, or the items of the interaction. So, but the spiritual lamentation doesn't have that ignorance. There it's just factually looking at oneself. Just like it's a modern thing that, you know, we're very straightforward. Yeah, I'm a straightforward person, I say it like it is. But if you'll notice, it's always about someone else. But Danya Bodhika is the same thing applied to yourself. You know, like that one by Bhaktivinoda Thakur is that I wasted my life, you know, my youth, and I, you know, went for so much knowledge, and I became very expert and proud, and from this I got position, I got wealth, I got so many things, and then I became, thought I was very great and special, and then with that facility I started enjoying my senses and doing all these things, and then now as an old man, and you know, my senses don't work, and nobody cares, and youth is gone, and I can't remember anything anymore, and now lamenting that I'm not thinking of you. So lamentation is I'm not thinking of you. So in saying that, you're thinking of Krishna. So you see, it's not, you're in contact with it, but the tendency is it makes you pull away from material endeavor. But spiritual endeavor is there. So if you see that the lamentation one has stopped spiritual endeavor, you know, that's ignorance. It may change the endeavor. You know, it's like one is doing very outgoing service and somebody makes a comment like that, and so then out of humility, think, okay, maybe I should just stick to doing something simple. Then that'll be spiritual. Lamentation, maybe I am proud and this and that, or okay, I was acting in a way that wasn't suitable for this, for those particular people. You know, you have to be pretty expert to act in a way that's contradictory to them. Like Prabhupada goes to Sweden. In Sweden, he goes to the university. At the university, he speaks to the students. What does he speak about? Class distinction, which in that day was the worst thing you could talk about. They were so much into everything's equal. And he's talking first-class man, second-class man. He's not talking Brahman, Kshatriya. He's not softening it all and making it nice and powerful. He's going first-class man, second-class man, third-class man, fourth-class man. And they're getting so agitated. And then he asks for questions, and they say, yeah, what class man are you? And then he says, fifth-class, servant of all the other four. Bang, that's it. They all think that's great. So he created such tension because otherwise he said it nicely, oh, it's nice and it's good and this and that. Yeah, okay, interesting. And then they'll walk out. But he created something that became so important for them. It hit their value system that then when he resolved it, he was in it. They already now appreciated this person and what he's doing like that. So do that. That's the example, that's the ideal. But if not, then. So the point is service, that one's rendering service. If one goes and lament, okay, this is the devotees and the this and that, and so many things that leaves devotional service, that's lamentation and ignorance, that's mundane. Like that. Yeah, and the self-centered is here he's not talking about himself. Basically they're just saying I'm so foolish that I didn't see, and then immediately they're talking about Krishna and Krishna's sense. Why is it that who's given the platform of knowledge? Why does the value of knowledge even exist? Because it comes from Krishna. It's one of Krishna's opulences. Why is status in society so important? Because that's influence, power that's come from Krishna. Right? Why is the youth a beauty? Because it's one of Krishna's qualities. Right? So all these things are it's established by him. So you can see as I went after these for myself. That's foolish. So immediately after identifying it, one moves on. But if one simply, oh, I'm so useless, I'm so terrible, I'm so, what are you going to do? Oh, nothing, because I'm so useless, I'm so terrible, and that. But we should make a plan. Yeah, but I'm so useless, I'm so terrible. This person is only interested in themselves. It's just a negative way of making themselves the center of the universe and sucking everybody into the vortex. But because they're the victim, then according to the modern standard, then they have the divine right to get in everybody's face, and everybody's got to identify with them. And if you don't, then you're a demon. You're actually a demon. Rather than, okay, it's there, problem is there, now what are you going to do about it? Let's move on. If you want to move on, that means the person's introspective and actually wants a solution. If they don't want to move on, they just want to they're just self-absorbed, that's it. But they may like it, may not like it, but that's the reality. Because the point is okay, but everybody's got a bad day, so all we're supposed to sit around and talk and lament about our bad days. You can use it as a medium of moving forward. That yes, I did this, and because of that, these things happen. So therefore, I don't do this, and they won't happen. I mean, see, oh,
history is only used to learn from the mistakes or the good or the bad of what was done. On its own, except for what's connected to Krishna, it's an absolutely useless doctrine. So unless one learns from it, there's no use to it. So you have to study it, not for its own sake, but study it to see how did the great personalities behave that they got a proper result, and what activities were performed that then gave a negative result. That's the use of history. So now the perfection of that is how did the devotee act that he got Krishna, and what devotees acted that they lost. The Pandavas got Krishna, Dhritarashtra didn't. Why? The Pandavas don't offend devotees, Dhritarashtra did. But otherwise, as far as running the kingdoms, as far as the birth of the family, as far as the knowledge, there's probably not a lot of difference between the Pandavas and Dhritarashtra. Yudhishthira may be more outstanding, but what he knows would be easily comparable to other Pandavas. You know, he was known as a Rajarshi, Dhritarashtra. He knew all that. Mahabharata opens, I think, in the second chapter. It might even be the first chapter. He lists everything where he knew that he was going to lose. You know, he says, when my son came up, when the house of lacquers burned, then I knew that was it, we were finished. When the Pandavas married Draupadi, then I knew we were finished. When, you know, they just went through from the beginning of their existence up to the end, up to that. And this is, you know, he's lamenting the Sanjay, you know, after when the battle and all that's going to happen. So he already knew. He knows. He's expert. But he just says, I know, but I'm so attached, I can't do it. And that ill-motivated Dhritarashtra, he knows Krishna is the Paramatma. He knows the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He knows that what he wants is what's going to happen. But I'm so attached to my son, I can't. So it's not that he, on his own way, he is a great personality. Otherwise, why would we be discussing him? It was complete nonsense if we wouldn't be looking at his life. Right? Just like Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha. Means the only reason we're discussing them is because they're great personalities. You know, Rajai and Vijay. Otherwise, well, what are we, as so many other big demons, we don't bother with them. So we only hear about stories of demons that are connected to the devotees of the Lord. We don't hear about demons, just hear about demons. If we lament for not being qualified to serve, we lament that now that's okay, so that brings us to our senses that yes, I have to do something. But now immediately then there should be something positive to come in that place. Otherwise it's not balanced. There must be a plan. Okay, I'm not qualified, so therefore the problem is not being qualified. The problem is not myself. The soul is pure. But because I identify by my consciousness with the material energy, therefore I'm suffering. Does that make sense? So now I'm lamenting because I'm unqualified, so therefore what is qualification? So immediately then the thought should go to what is qualification? And how to practically gain it for myself and my situation. You know, what is qualification in general and what is specific for my situation and how I will gain it. Right? And then have plan B in place, plan A as work. You know, and then, because now we're doing this, why are we doing it? We're doing this because it's to please Krishna. That's why Naishkarmya has to be applied. Otherwise we get attached and now my plan as I worked out has to happen that way. If it doesn't, then you know, people are gonna hear about it. You know? So then that's the difficulty because we're attached to no. It's Krishna, the result is for Krishna. It's not that okay, now I've worked out a way to get my ego bolstered again and I'm confident so I'm active again, which is good. Better to be active and puffed up, you know, Lord of the universe than be in ignorance and do nothing. That's better. It is a better platform.
But goodness is better than that, and devotion is the goal. That's why you see is the lazy no good doesn't have a whole lot of chance to develop very dynamically in Krishna consciousness. When you take the grossly absorbed dynamic materialist, if you can convince him about Krishna, he'll do the same endeavor to get Krishna. But the lazy person is not endeavoring to get anything. It'll be very hard to convince him to get Krishna, even if he does it in theory. Because lazy means you're doing nothing, so you exist. Right? So therefore, the concept that I should be God conscious, I am His servant, they'll accept on the platform of existence, but not on the platform of endeavor. Therefore, they won't progress. That's why, therefore, Prabhupada used so much passion in dealing with the Westerners. Because passion is the only thing that will motivate them. If you take away the passion, they immediately drop into ignorance. So this immediate double it, you know, we'll see your service by how many temples, how many books, how many devotees, because then there's motivated. But the point is to serve Krishna. It gets out of ignorance. So that's the medium, you know. Does that make sense? So immediately it's that, and that will don't be attached because you're doing it for Krishna. How the result will look is up to Krishna. It's His anyway. Right? So we have an idea, according to my understanding, this will be a nice result for Krishna. So I'll endeavor to get that. And what result comes out is up to Krishna, because what He wants is another thing. You know? Like that. You know, Krishna comes. What's her name? Rukmini is there fanning Krishna and doing Krishna and serving Krishna so submissively, and Krishna's thinking, you know, I'm such a useless guy, you know, I don't have any background, you know, no tradition, and you're from such a great family and all these nice things like this, and you know, here we are hiding away in Dwarka, you know, not man enough to get out there and fight, you know, like that. I think you deserve a better husband, you know. You should leave me and go find yourself someone who's qualified for yourself. You know? So, like this, she's thinking, I'm going to serve Krishna this way. There's going to be this very nice, pleasant interaction. And he's just goofing on it. You know? So the result, instead of her fanning, is she's, you know, fainted on the floor. So that's the point, but it pleases Krishna. She's making that endeavor, but what result will be there, that's up to Krishna. You know, like that. So that's the point, is that you have to make your plan, and in other words, your plan means it's simple. This plan is simply this. By me understanding where I am, that's where it starts. If I don't know who I am, where I am, I can't start the process anyway. I mean, chanting is beyond it, so it will begin purified anyway. But if you want to make it dynamic, you have to understand who you are and where you are. If I'm here, then you simply take where you are and find Krishna and draw a straight line between the two. Right? And so now that is your path you're taking. But now if you find that path, there's obstacles, you may move. So if you have to move, then you simply draw a straight line from that point to Krishna. Then you move, and then it moves again. And so your focus is just Krishna. So that's called determination. Stubborn is I've drawn the line, an obstacle comes, and I'm going to go through this obstacle. Rather than, hey, I'll just go around it. The obstacle doesn't need it. If the obstacle wants to be there, great. Be there. I'll walk around and go on my way. You can be there. You know, and then you move. Does that make sense? Then it's good, because that kind of lamentation is useful, because then it establishes who you are and where you are. And if you look at it scientifically, then how you got there. So then you know how to avoid staying there or falling back into the trap again. That's why, what's it? Vidya. Vidyam cha. amazing. Sit down and start with the beginning of the Shivanashad. You chant the whole thing. But I try to pull out a verse. So that vidya and avidya study side by side, because you're, in other words, avidya is where we are in our material conditioning, and Krishna is the vidya, and the path to get to him, that's the vidya. So then they're studied together. But the goal is Krishna, not to talk about ourselves. So we have to be introspective, we have to see what is actually wrong, but at the same time we should see what's right. The right means what's working. So what's right should be maintained, and what's wrong should be corrected. And we should apply that same formula to everybody else. What's right should stay, what's wrong should be corrected. Not what's, something's wrong, everything goes. No, it's only what's wrong needs to go. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says this is a great impediment on the path of bhakti, is this concept of starting over again. No, where you are now, you start from there. It's just like you start from the front gate, and you are trying to get to the to the temple here. But in doing that, you have walked over into the park over there. Now some will say, "Oh, this is stupid," and walk back to the gate, and then say, "Come down this road." No, you walk from the park there to here. That's progressive. So whatever abuse, because any endeavor, there's something going to be something good about it, something bad about it. No endeavor is completely useless. You know, just some endeavors are more useful. So you tend towards the useful ones and leave the useless ones. So that's all. So that you can do with detachment. If you're attached, you can't do this. Because I have my idea, this and that, I have my perception of what's right. So therefore it can only be done this way. You know, it's my way or the highway. You know, so then you're standing alone on the highway. So that's okay. What's the way around? Okay. This is now our, it's already 9:30. So what we'll do is, so now we're going to go with Mataji's question, but we're just going to say anybody who is, we'll end the class now, anyone who would like to go can go, and then who wants to stay and we'll discuss. Rantarai Shiman Bhagavatam ki, Shri Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jayanta Bhagavatam. Yes. That's why it's mentioned here, piety. Because the piety, well, there's two things there. Piety makes a natural platform from which you can more easily understand knowledge. Because from proper performance of prescribed duties comes knowledge. Karma automatically gives jnana. That's why we're not worried about sitting down and separately trying to study the metaphysics and not perform activity as the jnanis do. We know that by performing activity with the purpose of understanding and knowing and serving and developing love for Krishna, the knowledge is automatically going to come. Because if you perform any activity based on scripture, you will get knowledge from it. And even if you do it without scripture, some knowledge comes. You know, you have old men, they have so much wisdom on how the material world works and relationships, etc. Because by activity comes knowledge. Like that. So that's one thing. By performance of activity, therefore, devotees just come into their own and understand things so much. That's one thing. Another thing is by the chanting process, by chanting Hare Krishna, then so much has come. Like this. Now, the question is how to save further generations from coming to this understanding at 50 rather than earlier. One is that you have to have in place, well, the main essence is that you have to teach them that. You have to give that to them. That's the importance, actually, in the Vedic culture of the Vanaprasthas. Because Vanaprasthas, they are in the realm of detachment, but they're still connected to the realm of attachment, so they can move freely in either sphere. Right? So then they can just explain things, but it has to come from the realm of detachment, because as soon as you are attached to that, the person is going to respond how you want them to, then your method will fail. Because that's how it works. Grandparents are so successful in getting through values to grandchildren because they're detached. The parents are less successful because they're attached. So the more detached the parents are transferring the value system, the more successful it is. But generally, it's by nature, it's a given, the parents are going to be attached. Therefore, that's why you always have the older generation, the senior generation, to add in that aspect of detachment. Because you tell a teenager, hey, you want to do this, go for it. What do we care? You want to screw up your life, that's your business. You know, we did that. You know, we're not that stupid anymore. Been there, done that. And go for it. And leave it. And immediately it's kind of like they're thinking. And even if they have, when they walk out of the room, they're thinking. You've gotten through. You've screwed up their, you know, punk lifestyle. They can't be a punk anymore. You know, unconsciously. You know, they really have to endeavor to keep up the profile. So that's the thing, it's knowledge. Knowledge cuts through ignorance. But the point is that knowledge has to come from the detached. It can't be because I said so, you've got to do it. No. The scriptures say so. They probably had that example of that devotee when they were in England. No. Oh no, he was goofing on the devotee there. There's one devotee that was very convinced that they had gone to the moon. Like that. And then he was sitting in the room one time, and then Jamuna came in. And she'd been in the kitchen, and something happened and it exploded. No, excuse me. That devotee was there. He was cooking, and something happened, and there's so much soot and smoke. Maybe it was Jamuna who was cooking something and it caught on fire. He came and put out the fire, so he was covered with soot. And then when they came into the room, like that, the other devotees, you know, are asked, what happened? The Prabhupada says, no, it's simple. He went to the moon. You know, so any chance Prabhupada could get, he would ridicule him about his attachment to this point. So then at some point, some devotees actually left the movement because they couldn't digest Prabhupada's stand that they didn't go to the moon. So Prabhupada said, I can understand that they don't believe me. Okay, I'm an individual, I'm an old man. Okay, but how could they doubt the scriptures? The scriptures say you can't doubt the scriptures. It means human life is basic, you can't doubt it. You may have a doubt in understanding it. I don't understand. I have no doubt that it's correct. I don't understand it. You know, that's Arjuna's point. You said all these nice things, sounds great, but I don't understand how it sounds contradictory. Like that. So there's no doubt that there is a conclusion. So if that's there, then it will work. So there can be no doubt, and then it's just a matter of taking them through. It's understood that, you know, at different times, different ages, there's going to be different mentalities. And so therefore, then you kind of have to move with it and do something about it. You know? Yes?
Can I offer a comment?
Yes, please.
Goes right to the point, and real, like, the reverence. 1 second. The answer, just like it can be in 1 second. It is simply a question of your sincerity. He actually puts all the onus on us. That it's always a choice. The choice is always yours. And he says, so then the reporter said, what will keep this from happening? Actually then says, if you try to go on with your disease condition while simultaneously practicing Krishna consciousness. Okay, it's such a perfect thing. You know, if you try to put out the fire by providing one more fuel, you will not put out the fire. So we have a litmus test given by Srila Prabhupada that we just have to analyze where in our life we're mixing, you know, our desire for Krishna's desire. And then we just have to, you know, like plucking a chicken or something. Just pull it out. It's good enough. And then Prabhupada says, if you do that, you will automatically, in due course of time, he said, in due course of time, you will experience more Krishna consciousness. But it starts off with the easiest. It starts off with the most instant. In a second, he says, all you have to do is just surrender. And surrender means this. So, I just thought I'd add
that. Yeah, Chris. Yeah,
as I was hearing, I was thinking, wow, I spread this 2 days ago. The reporter said, well, how long is it going to take? We all ask that question. You know, like, no, if you do, how long is it going to take? You know, it's like that.
Good, thank you.
That's why I was like,
yes.
Of course, for those of you that are saying it's true, and we also started off by saying the question of training. As far as our society is concerned, it requires a massive paradigm shift to going back to what Prabhupada introduced in the early days and the emphasis on hearing and chanting. When, quote, big Islam developed, hearing and chanting went out the window because it didn't produce money. So therefore, that's a false conception. Because now, you know, corporations, they know that they spend money on communication and employee relations and that kind of thing because they know their business will make money. Why are they spending money on that? Because it increases productivity. When productivity is increased, the net profit increases. So they make money, they spend money, and they make it. So that same material principle applies in a society for Krishna consciousness. You invest in the hearing and chanting and say, oh, we could be making money during that time. Yeah, but in the meantime, your people are drying up. And so they need, so you lose money. So the investment in hearing and chanting will result in more money. If money, for a lot of our says money is the money.
Mm-hmm. Right?
So the point is that the whole paradigm is a shift. Or it's important to bring a change because it's going to happen. Maybe one day, if you know, the reason that they feel like this at age 50 something is because of the paradigm that the biggest not paradigm. That hearing and chanting is not very important. An excessive emphasis on what's viewed as tangible results, whereas hearing and chanting is viewed as being intangible. But it's not intangible because it produces spiritual results that results in what people call tangible. They mean life members, you know, contributions. But where does that come from, really? It comes from spiritual inspiration of the devotee who's fired up by hearing and chanting. Then he inspires a life member, or he or she inspires a life member, and they give more money. You just say, do you really need some money? And they say, well, people are always asking for money. Because that's not very inspiring. You inspire them to trust, and they give 1,000 times more money. So really, it goes back to the hearing and chanting. And then everybody's satisfied. So it's a question of creating, that you're talking about inactive and active. Yes, it goes back to actively creating the paradigm shift
saying in relationship to the whole class in general. There were two really valuable points being made in the class. I'm sure everyone will agree. One was that spiritual life means living in the flow of goodness. Mm-hmm. And then beyond that, of course, there's the purified flow of goodness, the emotional environment. And both of those allow us to live in the moment, in the present. In fact, only in that consciousness can we live in the present. Otherwise, we're affected by anger and momentum. So, Maja's question is, how can we, you know, see that we're actually coming to that point where we're actually making progress? Well, if we're enlivened in the moment, doing what we're doing, just like now we're here and discussing about Krishna. If we're here doing this and we're thinking, I can't wait till this ends so I can go to this or go to that, then we're not getting the benefit. But if we're actually thinking, what, if I can go on with this class for another hour, this is tasty. But then we know that we're actually in the moment, we're seeing this life spiritually, right? We're experiencing Krishna consciousness. You could experience the same thing if you were in your kitchen and you were cooking a fantastic, you know, lunch to offer to Krishna and serve the devotees. And each preparation, you were thinking, you know, I remember, and I'll tell one quick story, Prabhupada came to Hawaii in 1974, and he gave a very short Srimad Bhagavatam class. And at the end of the class, he started to get off, he had built a small asana for Prabhupada. It was really on a note card, sort of a piece of plywood over it, and he covered with wood, you know, with the cloth. But it looked nice. And Prabhupada accepted it as a very nice kind of arrangement. So Prabhupada started to ease off, got off, and as he was getting off, he dropped his leg over the front, and then it seemed like he had a flash. He stopped and just started, and we were all having kirtan. As Prabhupada was, you know, we started chanting, and then Prabhupada started talking, and everyone was, wait, Prabhupada's talking, stop the kirtan. So they stopped the kirtan, and Prabhupada said, so all over our ISKCON society, every Sunday, we are having our love feast. And here we are also doing, he pointed to Sudama and he said, here we are also doing Sudama, not yes. No, he said, so, tomorrow is Sunday, you are all invited. He said, and I will cook. And from that moment on Saturday to the following day on Sunday, practically that's all we can think about, all we can talk about, all we can plan for. So the next day, probably a very short class, it was like a record, 10 minutes maximum. And we got up and without even missing a beat, we see probably that we start walking and see parts and walks up to the kitchen. And even they had put a rocking chair in the corner of the kitchen, so probably if he wanted, he could sit in the chair and he could oversee everything. So he walked around, got all these different, and devotees who haven't been in the kitchen for a long time, suddenly they all wanted to be in the kitchen. You know? And the devotees who were normally in the kitchen, they got cut out. They had to but I cook every day, you know? And now you're outside. So devotees were so eager, okay, to observe Prabhupada in this setting that I remember on the outside of the house, they had a little lip. It was a wooden lip. You remember this?
No.
You know the house? Okay, it was a wooden lip that went around the house, kind of a decorative lip, okay? And devotees were like heads looking in the door, one head here, and then here, and then here. Somebody got a chair, they stood on a chair, and they were looking in, and devotees were climbing out of the lip of the, there were windows all around the kitchen, four windows this way, four windows this way. And everyone, you know, the brahmacharis climbed out of this lip, and there was like a 12-foot drop down, right? And they were hanging on, you know, and there was about six brahmacharis on one window and six, seven, other, like 12 professionals hanging over watching Prabhupada, just to be able to see Prabhupada in the kitchen cooking. Okay? Because for most of us, we never experienced Srila Prabhupada in that kind of setting. I mean, the closest we came to that was seeing that famous picture of Prabhupada. You know, everyone has that picture graphically in their house, where, you know, you put it in your kitchen, you write something to you or something. That's as close as we got to seeing Srila Prabhupada. So to see Srila Prabhupada cook, right? And then, so then, Prabhupada was chastising the devotees, such as Maharaj having a hard time with the fire, too hot, too low, too hot, too low. And Prabhupada kept saying, no, it's too hot, no, it's too low, no, it's too hot. Remember these things. So, in the end, of course, then they offered the feast to Krishna, to the Panchatala. Then Prabhupada was insisting that the devotees, how about take the shot of it? He kept saying, take the shot of it. So all the devotees went down to the dining hall, and they're all sitting, and then Prabhupada walks down to walk up the stairs to go back out and leave. So everyone gets up from their plate and follows Prabhupada. And Prabhupada stops at the door and says, no, I have cooked, please take the shot of it. And all the devotees says, no, Prabhupada, what are we going to do? Prabhupada got a big smile on his face and turns and walks and goes about halfway up the steps. Turns again and he goes, go take the shot of my cook for you. They go, no, Prabhupada, what are we going to do? The Bhadaji's ran to the top of the house. They got a bunch of baskets of flowers. As Prabhupada's leaving, now pouring flowers on Prabhupada. Prashadam's all sitting downstairs in the place, in the room. All the devotees follow Prabhupada. Again, Prabhupada turns to the garage and turns and says, oh, take the shot of. And they're always going, in unison, they go, no, Prabhupada, what could we do? The other Prabhupada gets in his car, calls Sugama over the car. And he comes like a very jovial rasa, you know, he's smiling and says, Sugama, I cooked for you, I cooked for all of you. Please, take the shot. So Sugama then turns to all the devotees. He says, devotees, please, Prabhupada's insisting. He's cooked for you, please, go take the shot. So at that point, all the devotees offer obeisances, and they all go downstairs, and Prabhupada puts his hands up in the success. And he drives off, and everybody goes downstairs, and then he took a shot. And after he took a shot, he had a spontaneous cure. So Sadhana came into the room, and just picked up Madhavi's and Karthas, and he had this incredible cure. And I can tell you honestly, that was just like being in the spiritual world. Nobody for a second was thinking, I want to be here, I want to be there, I should be there, I could have been there. You weren't thinking of anything but that experience. And that's just one of many. And we still have those now. So the point is, that I'm trying to make coming to be too long, but that's a sad story, isn't it?
Good start.
And so the point is that living in the present is in your devotional activities, whether it's being with one of your children, teaching them Krishna consciousness, cooking for the devotees, can be cleaning the bathroom, could be anything. In that moment, if you're remembering Krishna, you're remembering, like we just remember the past time, Srila Prabhupada now, that's the same as going back to God. Going back to God isn't just at the end of our life, but actually, at every moment, we can go back to God right now. Just by delighting in hearing about Krishna, chanting Hare Krishna, and remembering Krishna and Krishna's devotees. If someone sits down and tells you, oh, I was with such and such guru, he was in such and such place, he gave such and such class, he played such and such kirtan, or she did such and such, it's you're in the spiritual world. So sometimes the fundamental misunderstanding that we actually have, like Robin said, in a second. You can go in a second. It is in a second. We just have to go there. We have to grab it. It's like the difference between being submerged underwater and struggling, and then suddenly coming up and like, well, nobody, you don't need anybody to have to convince you that you're breathing air. You are breathing air, you know it, and you're happy about it. So the same thing in terms of chanting Hare Krishna. Just like the other day, I was talking to the devotees from Taliban, and I said, boy, just seeing you makes me remember all those four Purnimas, Janmashtamis, Vyasapuja, Kirtans, the wacky little plays the kids used to do, you know, and the feast that was just endless, huh? And that's the spiritual level. And you talk about, they have this festival every year where they put Radha Krishna on a boat, and one of the devotees there, Mahendranath, he made a remote control guidance system for his boat, and he could still ashore and guide the boat all around. So they put, you know, oil lamps all around this big pond. It's like 100 feet wide by 200 feet long pond with these lights. Picture it at night, all the devotees are on the banks, right? And everyone has torches and lamps, and the deities look resplendent on this boat, and you've got 150 devotees chanting Hare Krishna out in the middle of the Mississippi woods. You're in the spiritual world. You have gone back to God. You're just doing it here instead of someday back there. You go, cool, yeah. We're in a Christian movement. You have to get there. Think about this. When Prabhupada came to America, no one even knew about Janmashtami and Vyasapuja. Now, Vyasapuja and Janmashtami, practically, it's being celebrated in every corner of the globe. 450 temples, every country, every continent. The holy name is Mangalarti, practically never stops. We were talking about this the other day. Mangalarti starts at 4:30, but at 4:30 keeps going. So in some time zone, all over the globe, Mangalarti is going on. And all this happened because of this divine grace of Prabhupada. So the point I'm trying to emphasize is your point, this point, and your point, that if we are in the present, we grab the present in the ways that we are taught to grab the present, chanting Hare Krishna, taking Krishna, inspiring the devotees to do so, and sharing that opportunity. You know, instead of preaching at people, just telling them why you do what you do. You know, we do this. You're doing that. You're not that happy. We do this. We're very happy. You might want to try it. That's really what preaching boils down to. And if you're doing that, you're in the moment. And you're back to God.
On your point, still? Yeah, okay. Then we'll do it. I have something to that. Okay. Mataji's comment is that to actually be absorbed in what you're doing at present, then you have to actually like doing it. You have to have some affection for it. And he said, Prabhupada always asked devotees, what did they want to do? You know, because then they'll be absorbed.
But he's not all in all. It's that Bob was a special type of sweetness, but he physical association of Srila Prabhupada, but he's not speaking. And I felt a great loss. I felt I wasn't really getting the best of the nectar. The Prabhupada was physically right in front of me. His mouth was right there, but I wasn't getting instruction. Either myself or service, anything. He wasn't speaking. The only thing he said was that whole walk, which of course was very profound also, was there was a bird that was singing very nicely in the trees. He pointed at the bird and said, "That is Krishna." His beautiful singing. Not that he was the incarnation of Krishna, but then these phenomena of material nature are manifestations of Krishna's opulence. So he said, "That's Krishna." That's all he said in the whole walk. So I felt that. Loss. It was really in the body, and the Lord, not only those of all the other devotees, but also our godbrothers and godsisters who experienced these kind of ecstasies that you're describing so nicely. But then they fall prey to this idea that, oh, well, we have to have a living guru. And then they find, they look for siksha outside of this God, because they've never understood this verse, the principle of this verse. This problem, this verse solves that so-called problem. You can install like the problem in the heart. The word if you know, we're installing the live problem in the heart in the form of this body. It solves this problem of meditation. Amazing. But they're feeling that meditation, although they have all this wonderful sensation. And they're going looking for some for a body moving around flesh and blood that they can relate to because this seems to be a spirit for them. They don't really catch how heavy this is. I'm installing. We install the message in our memory. We install the body in our memory. It's hard. That's powerful. When a movement does that, then it reminds me of the presence of the Prabhupada, infinitely more.
Satisfaction. So that means you need training in what is emotion, because that's a lot of times not understood. Understood, and also how it works, where it comes from. So that's the this verse then also is dealing with that, because by following the instruction, by following the the injunctions, then it gives a platform through which emotion can be tasted, because emotion is not tasted on its own. It's tasted through something. You know, it always has to have a medium of something. Otherwise, it just exists. It's pleasant. It's nice. But when, you know, it's like happiness is coming through somebody, or unhappiness is coming through somebody. You know, so all one's gain and loss is coming through another living entity. So the science of how to relate to that other living entity, so that that those elements of interaction smoothly come. That's the Vedic science of the emotion. So if that's understood, then it works. Because like we'll take it that, okay, then the point is renunciation. That's given as the higher principle. But what actually entails renunciation, that is not understood. So like they say, is we that push for sannyas. actual sannyas means not performing an activity that gives a gives you a fruit of result. That's how Krishna explains it. You perform it for the result, you get it, it's yours, you give it up. That's detached, that's renunciation. But performing the activity that it doesn't give you the result, it gives someone else the result, and you have nothing to gain from it. That's sannyas. So that means it doesn't matter what varna or ashram you're in, one can be sannyas. That's the point to gain. Now, the principle is depending upon one's particular condition state now, at present, what is going to be the medium through which you can practice that. Right? Because renunciation is also just a medium. Detachment is also only a medium, because we're supposed to become attached to Krishna. The goal is not to become detached. The reason detachment is so prominent is because we want to become detached from the material world. Otherwise, detachment is nothing special. Attachment to Krishna is special, but if we emphasize attachment, then people are already attached to the material world. They won't distinguish. So the first thing in using, in correcting improper aspect of the mind is through the intelligence. So intelligence means telling the difference. That's the first thing. Once you can tell the difference between something, then you can tell what's the similarity. If you immediately look for the similarity without telling the difference, you may not have actually found the similarity. Or it may even be the same thing. So first you have to, so then you point out detachment. Because then you say material world attachment, that's bad. Detachment from material world, that's proper. Attachment to Krishna, that's the good. Because otherwise then they'll take attachment, put the two together, and then they won't necessarily perform proper activity. So it means that this person is young, has many emotional needs. The person says, I've never tasted any emotional... He has an emotional need. Otherwise, he would have been perfectly fine. 50 years of his life, he went without any. So, great, you know. What do you need to get involved in material emotional things? But that was a need. They were looking for that, but because they didn't know how to find it, because people sitting right next to them are tasting it. Why they're not tasting it means they don't know the science to taste it. Otherwise, why didn't they get it? Maybe they performed the activity, but they didn't know the mood in which it's done, or they didn't know the purpose in which it was to be done. You know, so therefore it's like, you move up in the hierarchy as renunciation, but actually the whole point is moving up in the hierarchy maybe for position. Because position gives a taste, it's one of the opulences. So just having position won't give you a taste unless you relate to someone who's junior. Then you'll get rasa out of that medium. Right? So then this person's position may be very important for them. It's a medium that's dear to them. But emotion is also important for them. So then they have to be able to taste the emotion of dealing with the junior and at the same time dealing with the senior. Right? Does that make any sense? So that element then, if that's understood, then the young people won't make that mistake. Because the person needed it, but they neglected it. Because even in that situation they're in, they're senior, and maybe sannyas ashram, maybe GBC, maybe guru, but there's so many opportunities to interact on the emotional platform with so many devotees that are in the same position, or something compatible, or something that's connected with it. So the opportunities are unlimited, but unless you know, you don't. And so generally what it takes is attachment is taken as emotion. It is an emotion, but it's not actually a pure emotion. You know what I'm saying? Attachment has to be put on something. You have to be attached to something. Just to be attached, what does that mean? You're attached to something. So then, it's not the attachment that's important, it's the interaction with that something that's important.
So the mistake will be made is that mundane attachment is what's important. But it's not. It's the medium through which they're trying to gain it, which is important for them. But ultimately, that is something that's coming through, like you were saying, is the walk. And then Prabhupada said that that singing, that expertise in that singing, that's Krishna. So what it is you're looking for in any relationship is actually Krishna. But one thinks it's that medium. So in the beginning, one deals with that medium and gets that flavor, but by knowledge, one starts to see Krishna in it. And when one works with detachment, one will give up one's attachment to it, though one will be comfortable dealing with the medium. Like Yudhishthira is detached, but he's comfortable performing the duties of a kshatriya. Arjuna is attached. He has no problem performing the duties of a warrior, but he remembers Krishna. So there's this idea is that if you deal with anything that creates any emotion, then it's bad. But the point is emotion's not the problem. Misdirected emotion is the problem. So then one can say, okay, but I'm attached to my family, so that's not progressive. It is not progressive if there's no connection between your attachment to your family and Krishna. Why are you even a grihastha? Where is the concept you go from a brahmacharya grihastha? That's from the shastra. Why? Because you progress. A brahmachari who cannot be a nice speaker brahmachari to get married is a progression, not a regression. Because now he has attachment for the field, but he can't deal with it. Now he can deal with the field, and in that field, now he can engage that field in Krishna's service. Right? So it's a progress. But now the natural next progress is that he's going to, through knowledge and detachment, not have the fruits that he will gain from dealing in that field as his motive, but simply to please Krishna by following Krishna's directions how to deal with that field. That becomes his motive. Then the actual will get the taste that he's looking for. Because as soon as it's not yours, you can have it. You know, it's just like someone else's kid you have more fun with than your own. You know, like that. So it's natural. That's the principle of how it works. When it's Does that make some sense? Yeah.
This actually all goes back to the segment of the class which you started to touch on, which is masculine and feminine.
Mm-hmm.
The problem that Mataji is referring to is really related to Bhagavad Gita's explanation that one has to be tasting a higher taste.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, one can never give up lower taste.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, I would like to say, for the benefit of all the devotees, that Prabhupada does touch directly on this issue in the same session in Science of Self-Realization, wherein he explains that Guru is one, because Guru simply is the liberated telegraph. He uses this example. He says that the man who's delivering the telegraph message has no particular attachment one way or the other to the message. He's just handing you the message. He doesn't have a rasa developed between all the people that he's delivering the message to. You know, they may say, oh, there's Mr. Johnson, he's the mailman, we say hi, he says hi. He's not particularly attached to, you know, the events in the lives of all the people on his route. He goes every day, delivers the mail, he sorts the mail, he puts it in the box, he goes to the box, he goes to the box. And Srila Prabhupada explains that that is the actual relationship between the spiritual master and the disciple. And so, there isn't a necessity, and I have to say, this is a very, very broad discussion, but it's one which I've been thinking about very deeply for quite some time and written on it. For my own edification, I haven't said published it, but I've actually gone into Prabhupada's statements in his writings and in the last year of his life with us, his specific statements and how they differ. Because, in effect, our society adopted the advice or counsel of one of Prabhupada's godbrothers in terms of how he would apply Srila Prabhupada's instructions on spiritual mastery. And the instructions of that godbrother differ from Srila Prabhupada in that, now some people will say, they'll argue and say, not in its essence, but actually they do. And when you actually study them, you'll see. Prabhupada did not expect, he did not anticipate, at least not in the initial stage of his absence and the application of his instructions on initiation, it would have been artificial to ask the devotees to consider the individuals who were appointed by Srila Prabhupada to appoint and to initiate. It would have been artificial for them to see them as absolutely necessary in their life, to see them as making a major contribution, when in fact they may make absolutely hardly any contribution. And it was understood by Srila Prabhupada in that way. The new disciples were not advised to study the 11 candidates. They were not considered candidates by Prabhupada. They were direct appointees, just like the mailman is a direct appointee from the post office. And the people on the street are not at liberty to study the candidates in their neighborhood. Who are the various postmen? And who are the, I don't want Joe Brown delivering my mail. I want Tom Reynolds. He delivers 6 blocks over, but I like him. And I want him to deliver my mail from now on. No. Prabhupada did not establish such a system. That system was introduced by Prabhupada's godbrothers. In a very subtle way, that idea was introduced. Now, Prabhupada knew that in the course of time, as the movement matured, as the devotees matured, that relationships would develop, not on the basis of I like him, he likes me, he makes me feel good, like mundane love. In fact, in the opposite way, when we come in contact with a bona fide representative of the Department of God, we automatically begin to assess to what extent we are still mixing matter and spirit. That is the effect that comes to contact with one by the representative of the Mantra. We start to assess our own willingness to mix matter and spirit. And that would come out naturally. Prabhupada knew that that would manifest over time. But initially, if you remember, Prabhupada appointed Sri Dayananda Maharaj for the entire subcontinent of South America. He was asked, well, what about South America? And Prabhupada said, oh yes, Sri Dayananda, he can do it. Now the people in South America were not actually, they were not obliged to study the 11 men in ISKCON who were appointed to initiate them. They were not asked to make some kind of heartfelt decision as to which one they liked, which one they thought was the better representative of the Prabhupada. Prabhupada established who he appointed to that area, to initiate in that area. So, Vridananda was not meant to artificially think that he had some love rasa with these people. That because I'm giving you this information and you're taking this information, now we sentimentally, you know, and in this way, I satisfy my need, even though I'm a sannyasi, okay, and I don't have a wife or children, now I'm going to experience this emotion that you're talking about through my relationship with my followers. They're not your followers. They're Krishna's followers. And you're just a sheep herder. You're tending them. Okay? We're custodians. The false emotion develops when we think, you're my wife. You're my child. The concept of mine automatically builds in the concept of false emotion. And it's, like you said, progressive. Progress to it. Because if you marry, you take a wife, you realize in due course of time that she, not unlike Krishna, who creates the rasas, I might have entered into this relationship thinking she was going to treat me this way, and I find out that she has her own ideas about how she's going to. And they're a reflection of her previous rasa with her father and her mother, etc. You see? And all of these things come into play. And then, of course, we have children, and we think our sons are going to be like Vidunya in the Nectar of Devotion. Vidunya. He found out that Krishna didn't like something, he didn't like it. He found out that Krishna liked something, he liked it, even if he didn't like it. But our sons don't do that. So many times we say, I don't want you to do that. I want to do it. You know, and we slap anything other than a mailman. We're not allowed to enjoy this rasa with our followers. We're meant to take our followers, and they're not our followers. We're meant to take people that come to Krishna, and we're the custodian. We're meant to make sure that they get the right message. It never changes. We tell them the truth. We try to precept it and exemplify it. And we function as a mailman. The man who instructed the devotees, he didn't just instruct the original 11, he instructed the 6,500 that he initiated how to relate with these 11 and those who follow. How to relate with them. And it wasn't that we were meant to cultivate. I never wrote to Prabhupada and said, Prabhupada, I love you so much. Some people say that's a defect, and I said, it's nonsense. Prabhupada, he didn't encourage me, he didn't ask that of us. He didn't ask us to relate with him in this way. He said, obey, do follow the instructions. If you're doing that, you know that reciprocation is there. Now, some devotees had a different relationship, but with the 6,500 devotees that there was 150, 200 devotees who got initiated by Prabhupada in the first few years directly in that environment. After that, Prabhupada expanded mission all over the world, and no one related to Prabhupada in that fashion. The love was expressed in kirtan, it was expressed like this, during class, it was expressed in acting on the instructions, mostly 16 rounds, Prabhupada said. How do you know I'm pleased? Prabhupada, here comes the feedback in 16 rounds, and following the principles. So the emotional exchanges that these men are claiming they didn't have simply means that they were not purified of their desire. They hadn't gone through the progressive stage correctly or at all, so that they could come through and go, wife, I don't think so. I don't want a wife. Children, I don't think so. I don't want any more kids. I mean, when a woman's 18, she wants a child. When she's 45 and she's had six, she doesn't want a child. So she's purified. It's progressive. You see, she's gone through that correctly. Now, not to say that they should all go back and do that, but the point is, it would be new agey and nonsensical to say that somehow or other, this time has not been able to meet these needs of these people. No, that's false. It's artificial. No, they, at one point or another, were either frustrated, having not progressively been purified correctly, having not dived into the holy name and taken full shelter of the holy name, or perhaps some offense. Every fall down that has ever occurred in my life personally, or in anyone's life that we observe, is actually not something to cause the diminishment of our faith. Every fall down we observe is meant to actually support our faith in the scripture. Scripture says if you do like this, you're going to fall down. If I do like that and I don't fall down, that means the scripture falls. Or that means that it could mean many things, but when someone falls down, we simply have to say, Prabhu, what weed did you allow to grow? You know, one of my own leaders actually had a fall down that I knew of, specifically as a young Ramachara, and I didn't think anything of it, except that it proved that if you do this, you're going to fall down. You see? So these things that happen in ISKCON are actually nothing more, nothing less than very positive affirmation of the scriptural injunctions that are there, that you must do this in order to do this and experience this and get this. And if you do otherwise, then you will get this result. And by getting that result, by getting the opposing result, our faith becomes enhanced. It becomes increased. And we don't become emotionally damaged ourselves. Neither does that person. Because that person goes through that experience, honestly reads the scripture, and honestly goes, hey, this is what happened. And they should treat themselves, they should be given encouragement by every devotee. Hey, boom, no problem. You know, just pick yourself up and keep going. Years ago, there was a person who swam in some Olympic event for some country in Africa. was two Olympics back, they didn't have, the person who was supposed to swim the event couldn't swim the event. So they put just an unknown person who was not trained for this event, okay? 1500 meter relay or something, I can't remember what it was, a swimming event. And the person swam the event but was in no way, shape, or form capable of winning. But he was determined that he would swim the entire length of the pool. He would do the whole, the 10 classes was in the event. I can't remember, this was quite recently. The entire stadium that was cheering for the people, right? They cheered for the winners, of course. But after cheering for the winners, the entire stadium got behind the effort of this one person who just kept swimming, just kept going. Until the last final lap, the whole place was on their feet. 50,000 people cheering for this man. This man who was unqualified to compete in the event, just wanted to make it to the end. And when he got to the end, the whole place went crazy. Completely crazy. So in that sense, all of us should encourage each other. God loves and God is to life. No matter what happens in our emotional service, encourage each other to just hold on to the process. Keep swimming. Keep paddling. There's no loss. There's no diminution. You're actually safely. If you're engaged in the stroking, you're swimming. You're safely. And you're going to make it. You are going to make it. Just keep going. And that's the extent, the full extent of what should come out of this. But as far as them not having experience correctly, they shouldn't even have ever, no one should think that they're going to experience a rasa, a mundane rasa, a superior to subordinate, etc., etc. Because going back to your point in the class, the only real man is Krishna. He and Arjuna engaged in a very male activity, warrior activity, killing, etc. But he was as female as any gopi. He was doing it just for Krishna. So if someone's functioning as guru, sannyasi, GPC, temple president, father, husband, it doesn't matter. Unless you're doing it for Krishna, and you will eventually get slapped somehow or other, you will experience a mild slap or a harsh slap, in that you will discover you're not the enjoyer, not the controller, you're just a mailman. And a mailman has no emotional relationship with the recipient of the mail. And that's the rasa is when the person standing in front of the mailman opens the mail and goes, "Oh my God, I won the lottery!" Or, "Oh my gosh, my daughter's going to have a baby!" Okay, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And they're having a rasa with the information. They're having a rasa with the person on the other end of that communication. "Oh my God, the income tax is coming back and they say I don't owe them a dime. I got a relationship with the government, which is blissful," etc., etc., etc. It's not like the mailman. Of course, in the exuberance, you may shake the mailman's hand, you may go, "Oh, woman, throw her arms around, give a big kiss on the cheek, and say, 'Thank you, thank you. My husband's alive. I thought my husband's alive no more. But, you know, I thought it was going to get bad news. I got good news.'" So, this is the main point, is that as representatives of Christian consciousness, we're just mailmen. And the emotional relationships we have to help them are through the spiritual message of Krishna, going back to Krishna. That's how it's actually meant to be experienced. This introduction of this notion that the newcomers are supposed to study the field, see who their heart goes to, that introduced to the Prabhupada's mission, especially at a very tender age, something which we were not equipped to deal with. Because we were all too much too newcomer to understand the difference between transcendental rasa and mundane rasa. And the overlap is problems very, very adamant that the spiritual mass can be heard in a certain way and understood in a certain way. And in Science of Self-Realization, there are three essays by the Prabhupada. Two essays and one conversation, and one of the essays is probably five spiritual masters, and the disciple, and the relationship between that spiritual master and Krishna consciousness is, it's like a nail. And Prabhupada comes along with a big hammer and goes, bam, that one's in, okay. Bam, that one's in, okay. Bam, that one's in. Every single question you can have is an answer. Every single one. And all we have to do is get the proper email. Accept it instead of trying to adjust it to fit our erroneous conception of ourselves, whether we're in male or female body, as we enjoy it, or just accept it as it is delivered by the Lord.
Strongly dislike the leaders versus the report that they can issue. Because it wasn't a big
I think what we're doing here is not so much, I don't think we should get too distracted by the framework of the, how you say, the whole system that is being used on the guru thing. I think the point would be made, because it all came from Mataji's question, was just the understanding is the consciousness in which it's done makes the difference. It means a form is not necessarily good or bad, it's the consciousness in which it's used. So then it means all these points that are being made are valid points. It's just, I think the Grosh Guru was talking on the point is that if one has emotional needs, then better you get that through methods that allow for that. And at the same time, as still you have to understand that it's not yours anyway. Ultimately, you have to come to that platform. So in the beginning, you may have that, but ultimately, you have to understand that it's not my wife, it's not my child, it's all Krishna. This, we're the medium through which it is, and then being the medium, we can experience that exchange. And then that exchange is what you're talking about. So there must be that balance between the tattva and the rasa. The two must be balanced. Generally, if it goes one way or the other, then there's a problem. So, since he's emphasizing the point of the tattva of it, that technically everybody has a relationship with Krishna and everybody else is a medium in there, you know, but then you're making the point.
The aspect of the institutionalization of...
Yeah, but that's just what he's using as an example. Of course, that can do that, but it's just he has to use some example to get, you know, because he wants to make it practical, so he uses that as an example. He can use something else as an example, but he chose that one. And then for your point is that you're pointing out is even though the tattva is there, that it is not, you know, it's not your wife, not your child, not your disciple, not your, you know, temple devotee. Still, they are devotees and you have a relationship with devotees, so then you have to deal on that interaction with the devotional culture. So that's the meaning here of the naishkarmya, is the activity has to be performed with the proper culture that results in an emotional exchange, but you have to have the mood of detachment that he's talking about. So that combination is what is necessary. Like that. The both have to be there. Like that, yes.
Also, Marsh, I raised the issue specifically because within the framework of, when you talk about the framework, it is not merely a practical arrangement. The disciple reads the scripture and is not actually committed in the reading of the scripture. The disciple is not. The scripture establishes that in accepting this person as my guru, my ability to study this person's character and his bona fides, all must have taken place prior to my acceptance of you as spiritual master.
That was
wait. After I say I do, it's not like getting married. After I say I do, but that's my calling, I'm not allowed to, unless you do something which is markedly foreign to the faith of the scripture, I am not allowed to estimate you in that way. Alright? And then at least that's the way people hear the scripture, especially in the world. So when I brought up the issue, it's because if someone takes the position, let's use the most important position, who? GPC come to present, because these are not inherently considered to be absolute. But the position of guru is. And in fact, this is where the problems enter our society. When, if you study the transcripts of the conversations that took place between the Zoroastrian Sharaswami and the GPC in 1978, then you read the position paper. The presented to ISKCON by the GBC in 1978 in March. And the action position paper is presented a position paper after consulting higher authorities. That was a reference to Chair Esmond. Right. If you study these carefully, you will see that his idea was that between the spiritual master and the disciple is an exclusive relationship. He must see the spiritual master as absolute. And if I say there are UFOs landing here and there, at least my disciples have to agree. They have to accept it. Everyone else can raise their eyebrows and go, what's the good Maharaj talking? But my disciples can't do that. They cannot do that. They're not allowed. Now, this point was not, I say, Prabhupada himself established a system. Within that system, there would have been perfect capacity for people, as Prabhupada said, self-effulgent. Self-effulgent why? Not because they're necessarily creatively innovative, not because they are going to deliver any information. I was going to walk with Prabhupada and die. And I'll never forget this, and I always consider that this was one of those moments when I was blessed. Lokanath Swami, the plane flew over our head. And everyone speculated where this plane was going. And, they started talking, it's going here, it's going to Prabhupada, no, I think it's going to Delhi. And then at a certain point, he turned around and went back, and Prabhupada was right, Delhi. So, Lokanath Swami, he said, in Vaikuntha, the airplanes in Vaikuntha, they don't emit such horrible sounds and such noxious substances. And Prabhupada's walking along with his cane, and he looks at him and says, oh, we've been to Vaikuntha recently? And Lokanath said, he was immediately embarrassed, and he said, well, no, Srila Prabhupada. I mean, in your Bhagavatam, in Srila Bhagavatam, it's 20 bucks and it stops. And the whole crowd of walkers gathered around Prabhupada, yes. This is the point. We do not invent anything. Whatever we speak, it must be embodied. Just like that. And then he's for effect, you look into people's eyes. And then you walk. So self-effulgent means someone who over time, he's proven that he will never deviate from anything spoken by Prabhupada, stated by Prabhupada and Shastra. Even if he reads other scripture, it will be confirmed by Prabhupada in his books. Somehow or other. He reads something else, he'll go with my confirmation from Prabhupada's classes, his purports, etc., etc. But when Prabhupada left the planet, he did leave in place. People try to say he did not appoint deputies, he used the word deputies. He did indeed authorize 11 men. And the proof is, Ramananda's name was proffered. What about Ramananda, who was Prabhupada's right-hand man for 4 years, the first part of the movement? Practically nothing happened in this town without Ramananda, Prabhupada, working it through Ramananda. When Ramananda's name was proffered as the 12th, Prabhupada said no. Previously, we were a little bit mean. Now we must be very simple. We must be very careful. So he authorized some. He denied that authorization to others. And it wasn't that he was authorizing them to now establish exclusive, loving rasa in one area where if you're not part of that rasa, you can't fit in. You can't join the movement there. You've got to go somewhere else. A temple president in Milwaukee, Wisconsin was not meant to tell his new disciples, the new devotees that came and joined Milwaukee, I can tell you everything about the absolute truth. But when he says, who's my spiritual master? You're supposed to go, I don't know. That's up to you. No. That wasn't the way it was. The prophet left the planet. He simply said, Satsuru, he's the closest one. I'm telling the president to write his letter. Satsuru, give the record. He'll give me the name of champions. That is the system that Prabhupada gave us. And he knew that from that system, over time, there would be some who would manifest such degree of faith in the Shastra, such degree of faith in the scriptures, such good examples. Then in the course of time, their reputation would be such that people would, they'd say to someone, well, why am I going to send my letter to such and such devotee? to accept these 11 men on an equal level with Prabhupada. Neither were they instructed by Prabhupada that they have to agonize over it. The average man in America is 2 paychecks away from bankruptcy, so he definitely doesn't have, at the end of a fiscal year, enough money to go anywhere and search for a spiritual master. And if that man, I can tell you this, if that man was brought before Srila Prabhupada and told Prabhupada that I got $1,000 at the end of taking care of my wife, my 4 kids, paying my taxes, and paying my bills, I got $1,000. What do you want me to do? Should I travel the globe and study the field, as Sridhar Swami said? Or should I buy all of your books, Prabhupada, and read them and become Krishna conscious? You know what Prabhupada would say. Buy my books and read them. And study under the direction of my temple president in Chicago, or Milwaukee, or St. Louis, or whatever. And in this way, the movement was spread like wildfire, Prabhupada said, all over the world. What actually interrupted it was not the reduction of choice, which is being implied here. No. What affected our society was in what the devotees were told they were choosing. That's all. That's all. Now, if we want to restore the integrity of society, we're restoring it. It's happening anyway. It's happening anyway. The movement is spread like wildfire. And the fact of the matter is that whatever stage you may look at the movement in, it's just like growth spurts. You look at a 14-year-old boy, and he's at a certain, he doesn't have any beard, his voice hasn't changed or whatever. And then you go away, he says, once you come back, he's got a mustache. His voice is about 3 octaves. And he's practically unruly, uncontrollable. Remember what's happening? It's a growth spurt. And he hasn't, he hasn't hit that place where he's actually stabilized. You understand what I'm saying? He hasn't stabilized. So this time, because it's a constantly evolving, constantly growing, constantly being affected by that growth, in some ways it will look like, troubled, or it will look anxious, or it will look set back momentarily. Like I said to somebody the other day, the Turley case in America, that's a symptom of growth in America. How is that? Well, they aren't going to go sue the movement to Russia. They got no money. They got no assets. Not going to sue the movement to Poland. There's nothing there. Except for a lot of people chanting our mission. But there's nothing to stabilize. But in America, we've got all these temples, all these buildings, all these communities, all these congregations, all this money going back and forth. So we meet the lawyers of the day, here's a plumber speaking. What does that plumber represent? It represents the Russian economy.
The progress took place because the movement did undergo transformation. But my point is very simple. The Shastra says, and you said it yourself, that the disciple has a right to review the spiritual master prior to initiation. The spiritual master must review the disciple as well. That was denied in the habit in the whole of our time.
Oh, you're, that's my point. My point is, and I don't even know if we want, because it seems like it's coming down to each other.
No, I would say that. I would say is that continue, but I got an appointment.
That's what I'm saying.
But I'm saying I can stop and then you can carry on whoever would like. It's a good conversation.
Yeah.
Totally
fair. That it should be a monologue. That's not right. It's not proper etiquette. It's not fair. It's very simple.
No, I understand that. What I'm saying is, Maharaj is holding class with a lot of guests.
Well, this is over an hour.
Because normally you go up to 11, so if you want to conclude on your point, and then, because I'll have to go.
I'm not trying to cut you off.
Okay, so then here, you make your final point, and then we'll close.
To leave that as a siddhanta, that it's not important for the disciple candidate to scrutinize the guru, because as a siddhanta, it was a massive error on the part, and it destroyed thousands of lives because of the deviation from moksha. The candidate has a right to scrutinize prior to initiation.
What is this?
I say because that was overridden by the institution. It broke thousands of hearts and drove thousands out of the movement.
I say
now, with time, as you pointed out, it has been corrected. And now it is working much better.
His point was this: when it first started, so that people wouldn't get mental, you just start with it. And as devotees become aware that this person I can relate to better, what they say gets through to me, you know, more efficiently,
well,
it will naturally grow to that.
You see, the thing is, Mark, so that you understand me clearly, that may happen, but it doesn't have to happen. And that is the point that I'm making. What he's saying is that inevitably, any new candidate must be told that this must happen. And I'm saying, we can disagree on one issue. That's why I don't want to make it clear.
No, but the point is in these things, whenever there's a polarity, because both have an element that's correct, because there's many people who it doesn't really matter to them, and they just have to understand the principles. You have to go through authority. So you say, here's the man, you're looking for a guru, here's a guru. And in many cases, because he can preach to the local area, he's successful, he'll also be able to preach to that person and be successful. But there are cases that don't quite fit in. So then naturally then those persons, then if they're not quite, if you tell them, hey, here's the man, and he's not quite satisfied, then at that time you tell them that, you know, you're looking for someone who will, what they're looking for, otherwise they don't know what they're looking for. You have like these eternal boxes. Because they have to actually know the science of even what they're looking for. So then they must know that what his instructions must work. If they work.
Faith comes from understanding that the instructions are going to situate you in Krishna consciousness, and your taste for the material energy is going to subside. That's all.
That's
easiest form of propagation.
Of course. No, but at the same time, it's just like this. Like you have one devotee, he's expert in prison preaching. Another one is very good on the street with the books. Another one does very good at the university. Another one does very good with the Hindus. It's because they know how to talk the language that gets through to that person. So Rupa Goswami makes this point. Swajati means that you're looking for a person that what they say you can relate to. So what you're saying is that's it. Is the faith that what he says will take you back to Godhead. So that's the principle. It's not something else. It's not because you like your smile or this or that or all the other things. It's that principle. So if that's understood, then it's a matter of you've had faith in this person's instructions, go for it. If somehow or another it doesn't quite gel, but this person's does, take that person. It doesn't matter. It means the point is you must have, it must be that you have faith in those instructions. So if a person makes those discrimination, that discrimination is engaged in Krishna service. If he doesn't make the discrimination, you don't bother. You know, it's just like let's say you have a temple, and the devotees in the temple don't have an aesthetic sense. So they just keep it clean and tidy, and it's perfect for Krishna. If someone has an aesthetic sense, then you start getting into some nice curtains or some nice color or this or that, because then that nature is engaged in Krishna service. If they don't have it, you don't want to bring it up. It's not necessary. If they have it, you engage it. So both of these elements are there. A majority of devotees, it's just who's the local man is good for them, because he knows how to preach to the local people. It's already been done. The person's already been chosen. Like he said, Vidayanan for South America. He speaks Spanish, he knows how to get through. So therefore, he is the man. But at the same time, as you have some that don't quite fit in the mold. They're there from karma, that's partly there. It's enough to take birth there, but their mentality is still somewhere else. So then they may jive with someone who preaches to the Europeans or the Americans or the like that. So if his point is that freedom should be allowed. You know, because I do know that there were cases where most devotees are very happy with the local guru, and there were some who wanted the guru next door, but he was told that he has to leave the zone if he chooses him, rather than just, fine, what do we care? You're doing nice service here, you do here. He likes the person, he likes the way the person manages, it's a great place, he likes the atmosphere, but just somehow or another, for that, he likes the guy next door. And then if that's allowed, that would work. So to say that it can't be next door, or to only say, no, you have to, it's not this, it's everything, you have to go on this pilgrimage, like you're saying. Both of these, you have to see what fits the individual. And basically, it's who already is successful in preaching in the area is the right person. It's already, he is the man. Otherwise, why is he preaching there? But the same.
What it's also is that the formalization of what has actually occurred in the heart of the devotee is not given the same type of emphasis by Prabhupada as has been given automatically by choosing decision.
Yeah, means the emotional side, what you're talking about, is not part of the question.
It wasn't part of the opposition.
No, the thing is on that we have to agree is that this whole kind of emotional thing is not. And the point is the relationship to the spiritual master, you have faith, this person will take me back to Godhead. That's the basis of it. But the emotional aspect, that you should get for somewhere else. But at the same time, is you do have to accept that there is, like what he's saying, that person, since they are agreeing, then there is an appreciation for that. Just like Prabhupada is a via medium, he sees this as Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur sends his disciples to help him in the mission. And they are his. I mean, he's Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's. But at the same time, we have that special relationship with Prabhupada, and we have, because he is taking the post for us. It's a post, so it has that elements of the emotional elements not there, but since he's agreeing to take the post and he's doing it to his best, like you were saying, the guy who's just swimming just because that's the game, you know, it's not just to win, it's to do your best. So that's appreciated. So it's a combination of both, is that we appreciate the individual for their endeavor, and there's a relationship based on service, not on emotion. And you have the element that there is that point, is that they are representing the Supreme Lord, so therefore...
Let me tell you that I was on a walk with Prabhupada in Chicago, when one of my Yadavs was looking at asked Prabhupada this question, and this is how the question went. He said, "Sure, Prabhupada, what happens if a man, you recommend a man for initiation, and then later, after some time, he falls, and when he had the word falls down out of his mouth, and when he falls, and Robert said, that is the fault of the one who's recommending. He is responsible." I don't understand that. The point is that devotee is coming, and Robert has set up a system to split Krishna consciousness all over the world. That was not going to rise or fall on the basis of the initiator. It was going to rise and fall on the basis of two things. One, the local person has to make, probably giving the knowledge, is probably given, never changing it. And then whoever heard it, accepting it as it is and genuinely, sincerely acting on it. The prophet said that combination of the sincere hearer and the truthful, sincere representative will produce a Krishna conscious man or woman. And all that the initiator was doing was he was confirming this. What happens is the local temple president sends his recommendation to the representative of Prabhupada in that capacity as initiating. Right? And he, on the basis of that trained man's confirmation that man or woman is following Prabhupada's instructions, he says his name or her name is this. There was no requirement that it was more than that. Now, it could be more than that, based on Rupa Goswami's sixfold process of loving exchange. I think you're aware of that. But my point is that Prabhupada's system was very, very succinct, very simple, very laser-like. It focused everyone's attention on what was actually essential, what was important. My doctor gave me so many different prescriptions for getting better. I took the prescription and I got better. So on the basis of that, I would recommend that doctor because I got better.
Yeah.
You understand?
But the thing was, is it would work here. As long, I mean, it's what you're saying, as long as the temple president, or the person who's responsible, is able to understand the nature of who he's recommending.
That sensitivity was conspicuously absent.
In what sense?
It's just like this. It's just like the temple president knows that, let's say, okay, especially if you take America. There's so many persons there. Now, okay, he's just made somebody a devotee from the university. He's very intellectual. He likes discussing on that platform. So for him, maybe someone like Rabindra Sarup or Hridayananda Maharaj might be a better go for him, while another person then would be better with this. So it's like you're saying, it's just like your doctor. He knows you and he knows your disease, so he matches it. You don't have to worry about it. But somebody's having to see that it matches. Or like the parent has to see who the child marries. They know the nature and they see it and then they match it. The child doesn't have to worry.
Does this matter to you? Says,
yes.
No,
yeah, then you don't worry about it. Yes, so that's the point, is that some point in the equation, there has to be the consideration.
And Prabhupada knew that that would evolve. In 1978, that question wasn't asked.
Yes.
Asked.
No,
now,
yes.
The counseling yeah. you're describing probably goes on now. But
of course.
In 1978, it wasn't there.
No.
Very hard line.
Yeah.
This is your girl. Yeah. You're taking initiation now. The peer group will say, you must take initiation.
But
that's there.
In
massive, it's a great part of our insensitivity on the part of the temple presidents and
yeah. So it's there. The point is now we move on because that's done.
Right,
so
right.
So the point is that the leaders should know what they're doing. They should be leaders because the common devotee, it can't be expected he's going to know what's going on in the beginning.
Most of those men are around now because of the offenses.
Yeah, okay.
Most
that's
of them are
yeah.
including the gurus and the GDCs, most of them are down.
Yeah.
It didn't work. It was a broken system.
Yeah.
I don't deny, I'm not saying that probably.
No, no. Well, the thing is, I don't think he's denying what you're saying either, because he said that now is a different time. It's moved on. He was talking about at that time is that if this element that they had been more sensitive was introduced, it would have run smoothly. And since it wasn't introduced, it fell apart. And then I get it from it's like there's a point you want to make, and then you give an example. So he'll give a lot of example based on the one point, because it's when you're giving a point, means you have your thesis that you can say like in one sentence. Then you have an expansion of that thesis, which clarifies it exactly. You know, then, and that also should be able to be said in a few sentences. Then you give example to expand on it to make it practical for you. And then, after doing that, then you're supposed to conclude it and show how the example exactly gets the point across in that. Then you give the siddhanta that's based. In other words, you restate the theory now in its basic practical application. So that's okay if you're just speaking it and there's no misunderstanding to disagreements or anything. If there's a disagreement, then what happens is when you give your example, or even, yeah, when you give your theory, you can't really say if you like it or not. You know, like we say, Krishna is God. Okay. So at that point, even the impersonalist can't say anything because everything's God. So Krishna can also be God. So then if we say, yes, Krishna alone and no one else, he is the Supreme Lord and all that, then at that point, now he can say, wait a minute. So at the second point in the argument or the discussion, that is the point where the doubt arises or the thesis arises of the other party. It means you presented your point. When you explain that a little bit, that raises the person, means that, in other words, that starts the process for his. He presents his thesis. Then when you give your example, then that should address his doubt.
Well, then I have to apologize because I'm sort of skirting around the primary issues.
Uh-huh.
And the reason is because they have very good
No. That's not the point.
I can state my thesis in three sentences.
No, I'm not saying about you.
Wait, let me finish. Yeah. I can state my thesis in three sentences and I can build from there. But I'm avoiding the central issue.
Yeah.
Simply because we've got, like I said, a mixed audience. When I say mixed, I don't mean men and women. What I'm saying is we have those who made their mind on understand the simple succession in a very specific way, which is different than I see it.
Mm-hmm.
And it wouldn't be the silly to ensure that I don't upset anyone's mind. So I'm trying to.
I was explaining.
It's actually very difficult water to navigate unless you're deliberate. I can't be deliberate. That's all.
No, here I was explaining to him is that the, because he was worried about the time also and that just the exchange, is that in your presentation you were putting a lot of emphasis into the example and to practical application of that example. So I was just stating it as that this is part of the forum of discussion. So it's natural that it would be there. And then he was feeling frustrated because he wasn't, the time element, what we were saying is that we have to stop. He wasn't able to fully express his points to give example because he had basically just made his point and explained it and didn't get into example. So I think he was just feeling that it wasn't a balance and he felt that he wasn't properly heard. So I was explaining that is that it wasn't that, there was that, it's just the time element allowed you to explain more, but restricted on his. That was the point of explaining that point. It wasn't saying that you hadn't said it right because you were doing it. He was also doing it, but he was doing it more quickly and you were doing it more fully.
Well, is there a point that you feel hasn't
been
made correctly?
No. But personally, I would say is this wouldn't be good because the time element in the forum
right.
Now is I would say is that. The basic, I see that there is a natural, in the practical of today, I don't see that there's really a problem between both of your points. Because you're addressing an application in the past that you're not worried about so much today. And he's addressing something in the past that he feels has also been adjusted by the day. Because you're saying, as the movement goes on, you have senior men who are intelligent, they're observant, they work it out. So then, if you take what's today, then basically you just have to be conscious, like what you were saying. The presidents, the leaders have to be responsible and know what they're doing. And if that's done, then it works. Details, then we can get into what exactly does that responsibility mean, what is it that they have to know, and all that. And then all of these elements then have to be looked at and seen what that means for that training. Because I would say a lot of what he's saying is also included. Prabhupada took that when he trained the president, he was supposed to be able to do this. But somehow or another, they didn't necessarily catch it. So then they weren't. Like you see, some presidents were very good at making marriages. Some were not at all. Because the ones that did understood that they're matching up two individuals that have to kind of like at least be compatible enough to agree to help each other in Krishna consciousness. Some weren't. It was just, you know, okay, he's a big collector, she's a big collector. You know, some way it was, who knows what the standard of what they were choosing. So they knew they had to use each standard, but they weren't so well prepared. So I would say is that devotees are more aware of this, but there has to be a balance. Even in the present situation, it's not ideal, because even if it's there, they still aren't fully aware of what they're dealing with. And so the points that you're making, then, you know, so they understand what was the tattva on which Prabhupada was basing it. Because he was adding that to already the training he had given his leaders. You know, but somehow or another that and this didn't match, which is a very common thing to happen. You train somebody in one thing, train somebody in another thing. The teacher knows that they're two parts of one thing, but they don't catch it. Like you teach someone how to make a sabji and how to make chapatis. But the principle of it, you know, they burn the chapati but not the sabji, or they burn not the chapati and they burn the sabji, because they don't understand how you're applying heat. And so they don't see that heat applied in a pot with vegetable water acts one way, dry direct heat acts another way, but it's still the principle of heat is common. So they didn't make that, so then they would miss the point. So then they would miss the tattva that you're talking about. And then they get all these other things and get involved, but they were not responsibly done. And then his point is that in doing that, the personal element of devotee may have been left out. But at the same time, is even if you address that, you can't address that without it being founded on the tattva. So tattva means rasa has to be based on tattva, and rasa is expanded from. They both nourish each other. Like we were in the beginning of the class, is that Krishna is God. He is the source of everything, but the pastime he manifests is manifest because of the devotee. The devotee has that love, that devotee is there, therefore that pastime is then expanded. Yoga Maya expands that. Mother Jashoda comes, so then she expands, you know, cows and milk pots and, you know, things to eat and, you know, places to take bath and beds to put him to rest in and clothes and ornaments. So the two go together. So it's like, from what I can see, is just for the time that's there is the principle on which Prabhupada has established it. If that's left, nothing will work. At the same time, as in applying it, you have to see that the etiquette of devotee-devotee is still used like that. Does that make some sense? Does that make sense?
Yeah, my whole thing is actually, you're right, it's actually very simple.
And
I don't want to speak.
That's okay. It's natural. The whole society is, like Makanlal had mentioned, it's not just only an educational institution. It's also that the whole society is actually supposed to be a Brahminical institution. Therefore, just like, you know, Pragosha Guru has gone in and he saw something, did a study on that, and he's sharing that with others. This is the Brahminical, how do you say? Yeah, input is that a Brahmin learns anything, teaches anything. So that's the method. It means it's just a matter of whether it's more formalized or less formalized. You know, it's just because, but the essence of it is that the mood works. You have the principles right, and you have the right attitude. Then whether it's more formal, less formal, will do. Because but it is a point. What you're saying is Prabhupada's point. His point was, is this mission is to establish a class of Brahmins who can lead society. So then it works, yes.
Maharaji just said, many of the gurus, sannyasis, and GPs need a lot of help. Meaning they're flawed in various ways.
I don't think she means it in that way. I think, from what I understand, what she means is that they somehow or another are respected in the community. They are willing to somehow or another take up these duties and do those activities, but they may or may not, in all aspects of it, feel confident. So what she's suggesting is that if there are devotees that do have an expertise in a particular aspect of that field, that there would be some way that they could take advantage of that to benefit. Like, say, the person is very willing, he wants to preach in a particular area, but he, let's say, is not very good with finances. So it's not actually a flaw, but someone else who's good at finances could show him how to keep his books better, and then it would work.
That's not what she did.
Now,
didn't say they wouldn't think it. Okay, I said they wouldn't voice that. They wouldn't say something like that.
Well, they're saying it now.
But I would say it's because of the techniques.
I mean, now they're saying, she's saying it, it was there. Now she's saying it. I got brothers who put in this
position
that
I've been doing. Did you say that about
problems? No, she wasn't saying about problems. She wasn't saying about problems.
I know, indirect indication of Prabhupada, Prabhupada brings the system, whether we follow it perfectly or not, now we believe the system is saying that's correct, that's correct. We're not just accepting the absolute. And he said, well, he's the guru, you know, we're close to them, and not me, so we're both. And yet, see, we can say that people just simply accept that what Prabhupada said.
Because what Prabhupada said.
Just interject something here. What I'm seeing is that I think a very important theme in what Bhrigosh Prabhu is stating is the point of the absoluteness of the message that's being delivered from the Supreme Lord.
That's all that is absolute?
Yeah. So that's his point. That's absolute. And I think the point that she's addressing is the individual who is a postman, even though if he understands that he's, I would break it into two, is that if he catches the mood that simply I have to take this mail and get it to the person that it goes to without, you know, adding, subtracting, everything like Prabhupada says that's there. So if that's that, they're a perfect guru. At the same time is he can learn techniques from other postmen, like how to, you know, deal with the dogs, how to deal with, you know, if, you know, the rain and this and that. I would say is that, so that's the part also I think that Makanlal Prabhu is addressing, is that him as a person, is that he himself may need something and has to be addressed, and the interaction and all those things have to be there. It means like he'd have to know how to say, you know, Hari Bol to the people that he's, you know, if he does bump into them. And they say, oh, hi, Mr. Postman. He doesn't just keep a poker face and I'm just the postman, I just deliver. You know, he also will smile and reciprocate. But at the same time, it's based on the principles he's giving that mail as it is. So you have the two. That's what I'm meaning is the tattva aspect is there. And then there's the rasa of the interaction between the devotees. So I think if, and I would say it is what you're saying, is that it's a big fault in the approach of the devotees that they actually put it up for question if the element or the working element of the guru is absolute or not. And by definition it can't. I probably saw the most shocked faces on GBC men's faces I ever saw when they were dealing with one of the main proponents of the Ritvik philosophy. They're gone for meeting after meeting after meeting. And trying to work out how the guru should this, that, how much worship, and all the details of these kind of things. And then at one point they just asked this leading Ritvik, they said, how should, in your opinion, how should a guru behave? What would be the ideal? And he just looked at it flat and says, you know, as Prabhupada said, the guru is absolute, his worship is good as God and everything like this. And he says, like that, that is a guru. You know, and they were just, I couldn't believe the look on their face, because they're expecting him to say, yeah, you know, stick them under the carpet, and now and again you can, you know, wipe your feet on it. It's something like that. He was saying, no, his point is they're not gurus. If they are gurus, they have to be treated like Prabhupada. You know, so he was on that point of there, but then he'll lose it on another point. So the essential element is the guru, that element of connecting one to the Supreme Lord, that's absolute, and that is not to be doubted. And like you were saying, only before initiation, you can look at it. If you want to have a doubt, have it then. Prabhupada always said, when you have a doubt, well, once you're initiated, then that's it. For the disciple. But at the same time as the interaction between them should be according to what the Makanlal Prabhu was saying, according to the Dati Pati Guru Nati Guru Mamakri Pichati. These nice interactions between devotees, that's the culture of establishing that philosophical point. That point has to be established. And there's no question that you can run a spiritual institution if that's not. And disciples that see like that are strongly situated, and disciples that are not will be weak. But the culture of it, then, we can work on. You know, it's like he's a postman, and he doesn't dress right, he doesn't know how to take care of his uniform, he, you know, doesn't drive properly, parks in the wrong place. But as far as the mood of getting the mail there and not that, he may be good. So then with others, then he could learn some other things that just make it, the social element work more smoothly. So I would divide it into these two and address them. They have to be seen together, but they have to be appreciated for each of their own point. Because from what I can see, is both are making very good points, but the angle that they're coming in from is different. One is taking, you're taking the this is the tattva, this is how Prabhupada established the scientific method of it. And he's taking is that the personal interaction element of it.
In essence, saying that both are looking for the same goal.
Yeah.
In terms of commenting on the side about improving the ability to interact with Vaishnava without the heart, how one is reciprocating or not reciprocating.
Mm-hmm.
I think both people would like to see that done in the best manner, and that's why Chatura sometimes raises these things. How does an individual, you know, what do you do? Pray about it.
Because you have to have both, because it's like you have to have it, accept that, okay, they should be, you know, they're more humble, they know how to adapt, they know, you know, whatever it is to carry the proper mood. At the same time, as there is the element of what Pragosh Prabhu says, is that since they're doing it, that connection is accepted by Krishna. And like it or not, people like it, don't like the person, it works. You know, it's like, if it's not working, why is the movement progressing? Because it works. It means, you know, the guy is, you know, whatever it is, he's the copper wire. But it's, the science is you put electricity at this end, you can take electricity out at that end. You may like the wire, you don't like the covering on it, you like the color, it's scratched, it's cut, it's bent, it's crooked, whatever it is, but you put electricity in here, it comes out here. So, from that element, if that's not accepted, then the whole premise of taking the cultural point won't work either, because there's nothing for it to base on. The culture has to be based on the tattva. Krishna is God. So the rasa has to be based on that. You can't have rasa. So many times the modern approach, we get caught up by this, that we're so trying to effectively create good social interaction, prosperity, nice relationships, that we forget sometimes the fundamental philosophical principles on which it's based. And as soon as you remove it, it's gone. You have a nice community, and that they get so absorbed in this kind of thing, they forget Krishna. And even though they work out things and they have so many meetings, that community also disappears. So I think he's making the point is that the present approach to it sometimes doesn't accommodate that. At the same time, as what Makanlal Prabhu is saying, is that that's okay, but if it's the personal element's not there, then there's a problem. Because it's like those persons, he made the point is that many of those persons are gone, they're not around. But those people who followed them made advancement, and many of them still are. So his point is it worked. And you don't have to get, you know, all worried about it. It worked. It was powerful. You know, but at the same time is that they're not here. That's not good. So if they'd worked on the Vaishnava cultural element of it, they'd also still be here. So just in my saying is that the both of them need to be there. But it's that the difficulty is also common. It means it's a common point. It's Prabhupada does it all the time. Is that when you're making a point, then you're trying to emphasize that because you see that as a weakness, and then all your examples and everything are about that. Even though you've taken on the premise, like McConnell was saying this, he didn't see his point in his lengthy explanation, but I had caught that point, and he was just giving so many other things there to emphasize it because he felt the point was missed so badly that's what went wrong. Same time, McConnell Prabhu was seeing that this point of just Vaishnava etiquette was missed so badly, therefore then he'll emphasize that, and then the tattva doesn't have emotion to it, so automatically it appears that it's in opposition. At the same time, as tattva doesn't worry about emotion, so then when you bring in that appears that's opposed. But there's a set.
I want to make one point also, is that we can take from Prabhu's reaction to the idea that choice was denied as being very a great disadvantage to the Dhamma, and ultimately to the movement. This is how I present it. Mm-hmm. And my point is that we've all heard the terms of Rithikism, the Rithik philosophy. Mm-hmm. No such thing exists. Mm-hmm. Rithik is a word. There's no such thing as Rithikism. Mm-hmm. Rithik is a word. It was given by our Srila Prabhupada, both in verbal form and in letter form, to describe the relationship between those that he had appointed to initiate on his behalf. Right? It's a word given us by Prabhupada as much as the word Krishna was given us by Prabhupada. So for anyone to take that word and try to position it next to something which is bad is foolish at best and devious at worst. Right? The fact of the matter is the only choice that is no longer available to a devotee now within the social framework of Islam, although on a subtle level, everyone embraces this. And I can show you how. But the fact is that everyone accepts Prabhupada and the simple instructions coming from Prabhupada as the absolute. And they accept everyone else's example of acting on them or repeating them as relative to. So they're siksha informed. Right? And we have hundreds and thousands of devotees in Islam who were initiated in 1 year, then they're initiated who left. And they just carry right on with their devotional service as if they haven't missed a beat. Okay? The adage is you have to fly your own airplane. We all fly in sequence, but when one goose falls out, the rest of them don't drop. They have to keep going. Okay? It's the same thing. I know hundreds of devotees who initiated once, twice, thrice. Okay, and now they're not going to do that again. And they just carry on with their faith in the Prabhupada instructions and the process. Okay? Now, my point is that initially it was to be as easy as I described, and I won't reiterate that. In the eventuality, there would be these relationships could or would evolve, but they are not mandatory. In today's Islam, it has been presented to the newcomer that it is mandatory. That you will, you need to, you know, it's like a person is faced with conscription, so he joins the Navy. And he says, I joined the branch of military one. Well, you were going to get drafted now. You're going to be in the military one way or the other. But now you're in the Navy because you said you chose, but if you hadn't chosen the Navy, you'd be in the Army. Okay? So in the same way, in Islam, they're basically saying, we're going to give you your choice. And these are your choices. It's now 23 or 24 or 82, whatever the number. I don't know what it is. Okay? Except the only choice that you don't have at your disposal is to read the letter that Prabhupada wrote in 1977 and go, that makes sense to me. I'm going to stick with that. I feel safer about that. Send my letter to so-and-so. I'm just going to stick with this. I'm sorry. This is what I want to do. And I can tell you this. If a guy was rich in his time and said, I'll give you $5 million for this school or that school, and I want you to initiate me, but it's going to be just a rhythmic initiation, and I'm promised, like, there'd be 40 gurus who would say, I'll do that for you. Sure. You got $10 million to get to Krishna? I'll do it for Krishna. You know, but the average common person, either preaching on behalf of Prabhupada or coming to the movement is not given that option. So what I'm saying is, these 46 options should be available. That's the way it's evolved after 30 years. I'm comfortable with that. But lo and woe, I say, to the man or the movement who says to the newcomer, you are obliged to choose from the TV too, and you can't choose Prabhupada. That, I say, is the big defect in the process. I say the process is perfect, and it's evolving as Prabhupada envisioned it, in that people will develop either affection or faith or admiration or reverence or whatever. Okay? And if they do, as that devotee said to you, then they should be treated. That's why somebody says, I accept Chaitanya Maharaj as my spiritual master, or name anyone. And there's no limit to how I want to show him how much I respect him and revere him. Be it Vyasa Puja or whatever. Even daily Guru Puja. Doesn't matter. I'm doing it, right? And I'm not going to say you can't do that. As a temple president, I would say, do it. Alright? I facilitate it. But if 10 guys come to me and they say, Prabhu, you know, I read this letter when Prabhupada left the planet in 1977. I gotta be honest with you. I'm really comfortable with this. Can I just do this? I'm gonna say, absolutely. Absolutely. And anybody who lines up against me, that would be fine. I'd say, fine. You can take that position. These 10 men are chanting 16 rounds, they're following the four way principles, they're worshiping every word that comes out of Prabhupada's mouth, and they're worshiping all the devotees. They just feel comfortable like this. And I say that that's the one element that is missing from the formula. The point is that as it evolves, but it started out like this, and we never went back and actually acknowledged that that's how it started. That's the way it started out. Our movement never went back. We wouldn't be fighting with Bangalore right now, the temple of Bangalore, if we understood this point. We wouldn't be saying, oh, you're a thick, you're a thick. We wouldn't be contaminated
just,
by that.
Just on one point here is that we also should be very careful in here, because you mentioned in the beginning, is that you made a point, but we have to see that we don't cross the two. Is that the person has been initiated by so many people, and now he's not bothering, he's just going on. The point is that, and he said that everyone has the relationship with Prabhupada because it's his books, it's his instruction. He is the guru.
He's the absolute.
Yeah. So the siksha aspect is the real thing. We're a siksha line. Our parampara is in the Gita is a siksha line. So we have to be very careful is that the argument isn't over the diksha. See, because this brings it down to is everybody who comes into the movement automatically is a siksha disciple of Prabhupada. It doesn't matter if you're initiated by Prabhupada or not. There's no difference in your siksha connection with Prabhupada.
GBC law.
Huh?
It's GBC law.
Yeah, well, whether it's GBC law or not, but I'm saying it is. That is the scripture. Yeah, that is the scripture. But now the question comes, is it's also Prabhupada's instruction that you have to make a pancharatra connection to the parampara for proper progress, because that will then ensure that your regulation in life and all that is good. So that element is the weak point. Because according to Shastra, you cannot do that with someone who is not present. You can siksha, it's timeless, so there's no, but diksha is addressing the conditioned element, so it's bound by time and space.
And the newcomer will say to the Maharaj, Diksha actually means that knowledge by which sin is vanquished.
Yes.
And the accepted demonstration that knowledge has been embraced, that I've been in contact or compact with that knowledge, is that my actions do change and that I act on that knowledge. The Prabhupada himself said that initiation occurs the moment you hear and you act.
Yeah.
So formal initiation.
Yeah, but formal is mandatory by Prabhupada and the Pancharatric system.
Yes, and the newcomer then would say, I'm not arguing that he can take from anyone,
uh-huh.
but I'm saying the newcomer would say, this system of formalizing my commitment is here given by Srila Prabhupada here. Uh-huh. It's here given.
Yes, but Prabhupada did give 11 people that you were going to formalize it through.
I'm sorry?
Probably think of 11 people that you're going to be ripping through.
Yes.
So that's my point, is it was never the option was, after Prabhupada had gone, that he's the man who formally committed the ritualistic diksha connection with. The siksha side of the ritual, that's Prabhupada. But the actual ritual and who takes the rap, that's got to be someone who's present.
Well, in fact, the newcomer would then say...
My point is, newcomers won't say this.
No, I'm staking that position. Well, that's an interesting point, because the newcomer's going to say, well, you tell him. Okay, so it has to be clear. You have the strongest devotee is going to be that devotee whose faith is rooted in absolute knowledge.
Yes.
Right? So that devotee will understand that the position taken by this person is on a formal level this much. On a voluntary level, it has no limit.
Yeah, that's another thing. But my point is your point that was before, is because he is the postman, still his instructions that are you know, rooted in Prabhupada's books have to be seen as absolute.
No, his instructions can never be anything other than.
Of course, it's the same thing.
No,
but wait a minute, don't get into semantics here. I said exactly what you said.
No, the point is...
My point is, I said just what you said. I maybe didn't use the words, but what you said is what I meant. Now, you accept that, or you're just a grammarian.
No.
Then you're a grammarian.
No, it's not a lot of grammarian.
It is a matter of... That's why I said it's the word. What I meant was, if it's not Prabhupada's instructions, it's bogus.
That's perfect.
That's what I was trying to say. Thank you.
I accept that.
Okay. No, so now I am going to get up and walk out now, because I am an hour late for my appointment. And I feel that all essential points from all sides have been made.
Yeah.
So I feel this is a good time to close. And earlier would have been too early, and I feel now, because otherwise now we can get into detail and we could go on with a nice discussion for a long time. Okay, so thank you. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samadhita Bhaktivinoda ki, Jayanta Gaurudhati.
Marsh, thank you very much.